I did not hit her. It's not true. It's bullshit. I did not hit her. I did not. Oh, hi, Mark. Body moving, body moving, body moving. We be body
moving, body moving, body moving. Skip to the end. Body moving, body moving. Ain't one sound ever sounds so soothing. Body moving, body moving. We be getting down and you know we're pushing. Welcome to episode 85 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
We've got a big, huge, massive show for you today. What do we got coming up?
We've only got the film that has been personally made for us. Our review this time around is the one and the only, very exciting, The Disaster Artist.
Oh, God.
Oh, no, it's finally here. It really is an action-packed episode, and talking about action, it is our top three action films of all time. So quite a big one, I'd say.
It's a broad one, isn't it? We've had some great responses on social media too. We've got a fun rewatch as well. We're going to be rewatching Mike Judge's Idiocracy.
Woohoo! I mean, stick around and find out if I enjoy that film.
Is a little spoiler there?
Or not.
And this time we're going to be movie masturbating against old Woody Harrelson.
Wow.
One of my favourites. One of my absolute favourites.
He's given us a Woody, which is quite nice.
All connected in a way.
Also, as always, we give away great shit on this podcast. Really good shit.
we got some great shit.
Some really, really good shit. And that doesn't change this episode either. So I'm telling you now, I'm just going to give you a bit of a tease. You know the Funko stuff about showing us your Funkos.
Yeah.
Mm.
Oh my lord, it doesn't stop today. There's going to be some more stuff from Funko. There's going to be some stuff from The Disaster Artist.
Oh.
Some exclusive stuff that you can't buy in the shops for The Disaster Artist. There's even more, but I don't want to, you know, give you too much now. You're going to have to stick around to find out.
Oh my god, things are going to get funky.
Really?
You have juiced me up big time here, boy.
You honestly, mate, you're going to be like... Can't wait.
Plenty more coming up as well. We're also going to be doing a one-off game. Now, neither of the guys know what this game entails. All I'm going to do is give you the title of the game, and it is called Name or Shame.
Is that it?
Name or Shame.
I love it already.
I'm hooked.
And we'll take listener questions and all the other usual fun that we get up to here on the Skip to the End podcast. Before we get started, though, we want you out there in listener land to join in the conversation. So please do hit us up on social media, on Twitter at STTE Podcast, facebook.com/Skip to the End Podcast, Instagram at Skip to the End Podcast, and, you know, a bit of email.
Yeah, email's nice now and then.
Yeah, it seems old-fashioned now, doesn't it? It's like really highly technical, but it seems like something pensioners would do.
But our younger generation do still email us their thoughts on the episodes or their competition entries, so do keep that. Is it podcast at skiptheend.co.uk?
It's exactly that, yeah. Our younger generation.
Yes.
In between, you know, premarital sex and knife crime. Anyway, enough of this. I just want to start talking about The Disaster Artist. So let's get started.
You betrayed me. You're not good. You're just a chicken. Chip, 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 chip.
Lights, camera, action. Yep. It's now time for our top three action films. Now, I chose this topic because I wanted something that we could all really kind of invest a lot of time in, because let's be honest, there is thousands and thousands of action films. It's not one of those topics where we're like, cinematography was good, but I really had to do some research into what their names were and a lot more. With this, it was just...
Them.
There's thousands and thousands, and I just need to get it down to three. And I've had a lot of fun, I don't know about you guys, researching and just spending the whole week watching action films.
Big time.
Oh, it's been great. It's been so much fun.
So let's just get straight into it. Anyone that on social media said, oh, what's an action film? It's really simple. There's not much story. There's not much dialogue. It is just loads of explosions and loads of good action. It is as simple as that. So Ben, give me your first choice for your top three action films.
I did say I wasn't going to pick this because it seems too simple and we've talked about it too much, but I had to do it. Often imitated, never bettered, Die Hard.
Yes!
Very good.
The greatest.
Yeah, it's the classic story of one man trying to take down a skyscraper full of German terrorists when all he wanted to do was come out to the coast, have a few laughs. It's the best action movie ever made. It's also the best Christmas movie ever made. It's the best Bruce Willis movie ever made. It's just one of the best movies ever made.
full stop. It manages to be both action-packed, but also has a great story. Like Mark, you mentioned there, we're less concerned about the story with action films, and that's absolutely true. You just want wall-to-wall action. This has both. That's why it's in an upper echelon. That's why it's better than so much that's come since. It has it all. It's got a great script. It's got great performances. It's Bruce Willis at his best. This is back when Bruce used to actually put the graft in. He actually used to turn up and care. And you can tell that it comes across in the role. And then, of course, you've got Alan Rickman as Hans Gruber, one of the single greatest movie villains of all time. Come on.
Oh, yippee-yay-ki-yay, motherfucker!
It is the greatest Christmas film of all time, without shadow of a doubt. And people will say, it's not a Christmas film. It is a
Bloody
Christmas
is.
Film.
Bloody
it's
is.
All you ever need. If you're not with your family on Christmas Day watching Die Hard, you're either adopted or you shouldn't be with those people that are around you, because
people who are adopted are just as much a part of their families
they are.
As people who are naturally born.
Of course. But, you know,
Jesus.
I'm just saying Christ. Now that you aren't probably supposed to be with those people on that day. That's a fair.
He's just digging.
Okay, Die Hard, the greatest Christmas film ever made.
I'm so sorry.
I'm sitting here in a Die Hard
I'm
jumper.
So sorry.
Look, Die Hard is incredible.
He's dying hard right now.
Let's talk about Bruce Willis for 1 second, right? This guy is as tragic to me right now as Nicolas Cage. He is doing any straight-to-DVD shite.
Yeah.
And the worst part for me is he's still got what it takes. Because when we watched him in... What was the film recently that was the kind of hinting towards the
Split.
Unbreakable 2? Split.
Split. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's only in it for a few minutes, but he looked like he'd give a shit again.
Yeah. And I think he'll be amazing in the sequel to that and Unbreakable that comes out in a year or two.
But everything else he's done, I just don't give a shit about since the, probably about 5 years.
But if not longer.
If,
you know, when was Cop Out, for fuck's sake?
Boy. Do you know what, though? Kevin Smith said he was an absolute nightmare to work with. I don't know how much of that's true.
Everyone says it. He doesn't take direction. He does what he wants because he's Bruce fucking Willis.
Yeah, you see him on talk shows. He couldn't give two monkeys actually being there. I think he played like two notes for harmonica and he was getting all these like sort of applause and go, people, oh yeah, you're amazing. Yeah, he had it on cruise control. He didn't give him monkeys.
You just said then he couldn't give two monkeys. Perhaps he could give 12 monkeys.
Thank you!
This is what you're going to get on today's episode. It's just one after another. Good luck, Gemma, topping that, honestly. Good luck, because he's just giving us the best ever.
Okay, I'll try, but I ain't going to say what it is.
Oh.
I'm going to do it like this.
Yes!
Terminator 2, Judgment Day, motherfuckers.
Great
if
movie.
If we hadn't have said an Arnie film at this point, I would have been quite upset.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. It was when James Cameron wasn't pissing around with Avatar 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and it starred Arnold Schwarzenegger and the baddest bitch in the 90s, Linda Hamilton.
Yeah.
It's one of my favourite sequels ever to grace cinema. And you know what the drill's all about. You know, the Terminator who was sent to kill Sarah Connor has now come back and he's now protecting her son, John Connor. And also he's got some competition up because he's going to be facing off against that scary motherfudger, T-1000. It's wall-to-wall action, isn't it? You've got one of the most iconic action sequences ever with the big truck and the motorcycle chase. And even watching back now, that is so impressive, the way how, like, the flame balls, like, when it crashes into the top of that bridge and then the T-1000's still, like, you know, hanging on for dear life and he's going to get that little son of a bitch. And my favourite is when Arnie's got that big shotgun and he does this amazing sort of rotation, like this 360 sort of cock of the ammunition.
Yeah.
And he does it so seamlessly. But it's the coolness as well. Like, you watch it, even when you're a kid. I know it was released over in the summer again in cinemas as a 3D. Didn't need the 3D treatment at all. But the excitement, the exhilaration, the adrenaline pumping when you're watching that film, it still gets me now, even when I watched it back when I was a wee nipper. Nearly half of the movie's $100 million budget was allocated to the film's special effects and action sequences alone. So when you see T-1000 morphing out of the floor and being this absolutely terrifying, godforsaken killing machine, you also think back to that sequence of the truck. You think back to, you know, the barroom brawls and, of course, the ending, the final showdown. Not forgetting as well, you know, the big explosion at the lab, because that is pretty impressive. You've got like 5-6 times where you see the explosion at different angles, but it's totally worth it. I mean, this film is not a wallflower. It is such a wonderful follow-up to the original Terminator. And if you haven't seen it... go and watch this. You'll laugh, you'll cry, it'll get in the feels, as the kids say,
yep,
right?
Yeah, we're still there with the kids.
They're all saying that.
So many yeses.
There's a couple of things there that you mentioned that I want to pick up on. First, you mentioned Robert Patrick as T-1000. I'd put him up there with Hans Gruber as one of the greatest movie villains of
all
time. He's terrifying. And linked in with that was how great the effects were. You say half the budget went on the effects.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really look aged, some of them.
Not at all.
The T-1000 is better than a lot of shit we see putting out these days.
Especially Steppenwolf. Terrible.
Oh, God, Steppenwolf. Don't get me started.
It's that first time we see it melt down to kind of like a magnesium.
Like a liquid.
Oh, my God. I still, like you said, Ben, that doesn't look that bad now. It does look dated, but not as ridiculous as some stuff.
Even when he's running after the cop car and then his arms sort of elongate to these massive swords and he's just hooking them on the bonnet and
I love
sort
that.
of.
Always makes me think of Wayne's World, though.
Yeah.
Have you seen this guy?
I don't think I can actually get on the heights that you two have done. You've just laid the foundation so high. I'm going to go with something from Arnie, all right?
Okay.
For me, this is one of the best action films. It's got the best one-liners. It's got the best plot. Brilliant taglines. Commando.
Amazing.
Wonderful.
This film is magnificent, and it's such a simple concept. His daughter is kidnapped. He has no reason to actually go out there and try and reason with them. All he wants to do is kill everyone in sight.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know in this film itself, he kills over 60 people?
Oh my God.
That's like one every 2 minutes.
Like a ratio of average.
Yeah. It's so ridiculous. He'll crash a car and get out completely fine without even wearing a seatbelt. He is punching people through walls. He does not give any shit. All he wants to do is get his daughter back, who I really fancied, by the way, back in the 80s.
Of course
she is really, really hot. This film, for me, is there's no morals. There's no sort of political statements. It's Arnie against the world, and Arnie wins. There isn't much to say apart from it's action for 90 minutes. It's hardcore. They're picking up people and throwing them into fires. The guns are ridiculous. His arms are the biggest you've ever seen.
Yeah.
And he just takes on everyone and beats the shit out of them all.
It is a great popcorn action film. And do you know it was written by a guy called Steven E. D'Souza, who also wrote Die Hard.
Yes! Yeah. So we're on a winner there.
Synergy. Exactly.
He knows what he's doing, this boy.
That's a topic, isn't it? Best writers.
Do you know what?
That would be pretty
never
good.
Never say never.
Yes, I like it. Right then, back around again.
Okay, so far we've had two of the heavyweights of 80s action cinema. We've had Bruce Willis, we've had Arnie. Here comes number three, Sylvester Stallone.
Oh,
yes!
My goodness,
and which one?
Demolition Man. God damn it, I love this film. It's the story of a cryogenically frozen cop being thawed out in the year 2032 after 36 years in the freezer to bring down an escaped criminal who was also frozen for that many years. It's, you know, it was the one thing they didn't want to happen.
It's totally relatable.
Yeah. And it was one of those films as a kid, just like The Mask, that I had on VHS, and I wore that goddamn tape out from the amount of times I watched it. I would watch it, I would rewind it, and I would watch it again. I was so in love with Demolition Man. It's not a classic by any measure, but it's just so much goddamn fun and has such high rewatch value. It's Stallone at his swaggering best. He's just this big swaggering dick of a man. But he also plays the comedy of it because he's a guy who's been defrosted 30-odd years in the future. He's a fish out of water, and he plays that whole fish out of water element brilliantly. So do you remember the scene where he goes to use the bathroom and they no longer have toilet paper in the future? They have the three seashells, and people are laughing at him because he doesn't know how to use the three seashells. That's magnificent. And then you've got Sandra Bullock in it at her absolutely most adorable. And it was her first big breakout role. She didn't do Speed until the year after. So this was really the kind of the young, naive Bullock, and she's brilliant. And Wesley Snipes. Wesley Snipes was one of the baddest motherfuckers on earth when he was in form. You know, you think of things like this and
Passenger 57.
Yeah, Blade.
Passenger 57 was a great movie. The Blade trilogy. You know, what happened to him? That's a different topic. We'll come back.
He was evading the bad guys, now he's evading Texas.
Top three, what happened to them?
Yes! Look at this, we're coming up with all the ideas.
Get writing these down, Gemma.
But Demolition Man is just so much goddamn fun.
I haven't watched it for years.
Oh, me
neither. And this is one of those ones where I just need to get on it now.
It's on Amazon in the UK.
Brilliant.
Get on it.
Well, I remember it being so, so good, and it's just... Look at these times, man. The 80s and 90s were where it's at. The shit you get now, like Expendables and stuff, it's nothing like what this was.
Yeah, also, main person who did the song for that, Sting.
Well,
there you go.
The kids
love Sting.
They do. He's
the one.
He is everywhere.
This is well established.
So, are we still in the mood for ridiculous stories?
Oh, always.
Yeah. Here's my second choice, Face Off.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Now we're talking also about another heavyweight.
Nicolas Cage, my man. So this film was directed by John Woo when John Woo was a little bit popular in the 90s and then he just faded into obscurity. But this film, now, I'm sure everybody has been through this once in their life. A bad guy.
What, having their face taken off? Yeah. Well, swapped.
Yeah.
Twice
for me. Yeah.
A bad guy and a cop. They go under general anaesthetic. They get their faces off and fool each other by putting their face on each other.
It's done so seamlessly as
it's,
well.
It's like a masculine makeover.
And there's no questions about the science. It could definitely happen, I'm sure of it.
100% medically accurate. But John Woo was like this guy who did the most over-the-top and the most ridiculous action sequences. And when you got heavyweights such as OTT Nick Cage and OTT John Travolta, marriage made in heaven. And one of my favourite things about this film, again, we talk about the same sequence that's been shot like 5-6 times. There is a shot of Nicolas Cage jumping in the water after an explosion, and this scene lasts for 30 seconds. Now, by the laws of average, that should take 4 seconds minimum. But it's just so pumped full of excitement when you're watching it. Of course, you've got the slow motion doves, old Nicky Cage's funeral, like for his boss.
That's a John Woo staple.
It's,
he does that in
every
film.
It's my favourite thing ever. It's like, and here come the doves. And you've got about 20 of them and they are gorgeous. You've got some kind of little boy in the choir singing his little ass off as well. But my favourite thing about this whole film, and it can be done, so those of you who said it can't, the fight scene on top of a moving speedboat.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Easily done.
It is a wonder, it is a feat of human nature and courage. If you've never watched this film, tell you what, I mean, well, you get two lads taking their face off and swapping it with each other, but watch it for the speedboat sequence. It's brilliant. It's just so camp in a way, I suppose. Yeah. It's just, beer and pizza movie. We talk about
all
this
of these
every
so
now and
far.
Again.
Oh, absolutely. Action movies generally are, aren't they?
Yeah. And it was when John Travolta was quite all right. He had a bit of a renaissance in the mid-90s.
After Pulp Fiction. Yeah. One of the things I love about this film is it's two hams trying to out-ham each other.
Peach. I could eat a peach for days.
Because they'd be hamming one another up even if they were just playing one character. Yeah. But because they're then getting to do impressions of each other, it's just ham on toast.
Yeah. It's a pig special.
That's ham from...
Are we going to start getting packs of wafer-thin honey roast?
From your local
butcher.
That'd
be all right. That'd be all right.
I'll take it.
So we pulled out the big, big guns so far, the real big guns, but we haven't talked about Dad.
Oh!
So let's talk about him playing Jack Burton in Big Trouble in Little China.
Hey-o.
The 1986 John Carpenter masterpiece. Now, I know I absolutely love John Carpenter, but I don't think there's many directors in the 80s would attempt to create something so wacky.
Mm-hmm.
It is insane. The story is so tongue-in-cheek, it should never be taken seriously. Jack goes to Chinatown in San Francisco. He helps his mate go to the airport to pick up his girlfriend.
Aww.
Really simple story. You think, okay, that's pretty good. She gets kidnapped by a gang. Okay, I can relate to this. Why has she been, you know, why has she been kidnapped? I can totally understand this. Basically, it's quite easy, you know, justification. The evil sorcerer needs to marry someone with green eyes to help retrieve his body and the inner spirit.
Yeah. Autobiographical.
So if you've got green eyes...
It's a story as old as time.
And you're at an airport, get some contact lenses because you never know who's going to grab you. But this film is wacky. That's the best way to put it. I think Jack fears nothing and he is one of our proudest moments as our dad to see him in this film. Him and John Carpenter are unbelievable, but he's amazing in it. The monsters are amazing in it. The fights.
Oh, right.
The fights with Lo Pan are like Mortal Kombat.
Is he the dude who looks like Raiden?
With the hat. Everything about this film, even the guy, you know, he blows up and he...
Yeah.
We went to see this at the cinema recently, didn't we?
Yeah, and it was the first time I'd seen it.
No.
Yeah.
The soundtrack, everything about it. I think Jack Burton is one of my favourite kind of heroes in film.
Mm-hmm.
Dad is one of my favourite actors. We love him. And the whole film, I think John Carpenter's so brave and I'm so glad that people... It's a cult classic.
Yeah, big
indeed.
Time.
What else can you say about it? It's just perfect.
That bad guy, he's kind of like Shang Tsung then, off Mortal Kombat, if he's trying to get a soul.
In Raiden's hat.
Yeah.
That sounds like what they've done there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh my God.
I'm glad that the talk of the remake has kind of faded.
Was it with The Rock?
Yeah,
it was.
And I've not heard anything about that for at least a year, so I'm hoping that's just gone away.
Too busy promoting Jumanji.
Big time.
If you're listening, The Rock, I love what you did. And for wrestling, I'll always be one of your biggest fans, but do not touch this film.
Agreed.
Right then, round four, one more time.
I'm going with something of an unlikely action hero this time round, and an actual modern film rather than 80s film. It's John Wick.
Oh,
incredible.
I think John Wick is a damn near flawless action movie and arguably the best action movie of the last decade. I think it's wonderful. It's the role that Reeves was born to play, because we know he's a wooden actor. He's got as much range as a park bench. But that kind of plays into this character, because this character is a cold, driven hitman. He doesn't need to be emotionally over the top. He needs a cold motherfucker playing him, and Reeves is perfect. But for someone who is so wooden as an actor, he moves like a cheetah. He's so brilliant in the fight scenes. And, you know, the way he moves with a gun, it's like the gun is an extension of his hand.
Fluid.
It is, yeah, fluid. That's the perfect word for it. And I think a large part of that is the fact that he does a lot of the stunts himself, because he's grown up being a martial artist, so he has this kind of background. The other reason why it works so well is because the film is directed by a couple of guys called Chad Stahelski and David Leitch, who are stunt performers. They worked on The Matrix, and Chad Stahelski was Reeves' stunt double on The Matrix. So because these guys understand stunts, they understand choreography, that's why they loaded up this film with so much beautiful fight choreography, and it's utterly flawless. It's one of those films that even if the story wasn't good, it is. Even if the acting wasn't enjoyable, and it is, you'd still love it, because the fight scenes alone are worth the price of admission. It's a magnificent film. Think about the quality of the direction as well. The colours. Think about the scene where he goes into the nightclub.
Yes!
And it's kind of, he's in, like, there's an area where it's all blue, and then he goes into that room underneath and it's all red. And it's just coloured magnificently. It really took my breath away, that film.
We know a third film is coming.
And the second one's fucking great.
The second one's great. We did a skip trip.
Yeah, we did. It's not quite as good as the first, but it's still bloody good.
I still like the judo throw. Yeah. Everything was judo. Everything. Even the way how we waved. Judo wave.
The thing I loved about the second one is all through the first one, they talk about this monstrous thing he did with like a pencil.
Oh, God.
But then we see him do it in the second one. That was pretty good.
It ain't for your mama, is it?
No.
The first one was a bit tough when the dog got...
Oh, God, I still can't watch it. Still can't watch that.
It's like a modern day Lassie.
Yeah, okay,
it didn't end well. It did make me cry a little bit. But yeah, it's an absolutely fantastic film. And it was nice to see him give a shit again. Because he stopped caring big time for a good 10 years.
He has such a narrow spectrum of things that he's good at. But when he does those things and does them well, there's no one better.
No.
I love Keanu Reeves.
He was born for that role.
Yes. Keanu John Wick Reeves.
Last one for you, Pooch.
It is. I've kind of gone a little bit modern too. So it was in 2006, and it's the Jason Statham classic Crank.
Amazing
fun
film.
A fun movie, that.
So, and this is when, because obviously with the topic, we do so much research, and I had such a blast doing all of this. But this was a film that I would happily go and watch again and again and again. And the second one is really good too.
It's what you want, isn't it? It tells you what it is on the cover, and it's exactly what you need.
So he plays a guy called Chev Chelios, who's an assassin, and he discovers that his arch enemy of all people has injected him with this poison that is going to kill him. But, plot twist, he's got to keep his heart rate really, really high. So he has to do these things that are going to excite him and scare him and terrify him. So he constantly has to keep his heart rate up. So he does things such as ride a motorcycle and actually stand on top of it. He gets to boff Amy Smart in Chinatown.
Boff off.
And my favourite thing was free falling from a helicopter, snapping a guy's neck midair, and then calmly calling his bit on the side like he's sorting out the Sunday papers. It's non-stop. And the best way I can describe this film, it's like watching a real-life Grand Theft Auto.
Yes, exactly.
That's a great way to put it.
Because even with the title screen card at the beginning, it's all pixelated. And the camera is constantly moving. It's never shot in a way where it's on a steady cam. When he runs, you run. When he's out of breath, you're out of breath. It's just a big, daffy film of action. And yeah, it might be ridiculous, but it's my ridiculous.
It's fun. I've not seen either of them in quite some time. I need to go back and revisit them because I enjoyed them a lot.
It's hilarious.
He did do a lot of films around that time that were very similar, where he was the main guy. Yeah, the map reader. That would be one of his films.
The map reader.
Yes.
That's a big one.
The head shaver.
Coming in 2019.
But he was doing a lot, and then he got involved in the Fast franchise, so he was the same character in that. But If he knows what he's doing and it works, I'm pretty cool with it, to be honest. I don't think he's overdone it yet.
And I think he was kind of in on the joke in this film, because it's clear that he's just, you know, he's having a grand old time. But he understands that this isn't a film that's supposed to be serious. This is a film that's completely over the top and non-believable. And he plays it so well. I think I'm a secret Statham fan.
I mean, I'm an open Statham fan.
Yeah.
Something you just mentioned there, Mark, about how he plays the same kind of role every time. I think that's true of action in general. If you find someone who's a good action star, you just plug them into a story as themselves. It's the same with Stallone, Schwarzenegger, Bruce Willis to a degree.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's what happens in action, and it's fine. If they're good at it, let them keep doing it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Last one for me, a very, very recent film, only 2 years old. This film, for me, I was on the edge of my seat the whole way through. I think it's some of the best practical effects I've seen in cinema history. It's a modern-day masterpiece, Mad Max Fury Road.
Amazing.
A fine choice.
Yes, I'm not going to say it now just yet, but something came off my list and this replaced it today. I sat at home and watched this film today, and it was on Sky. I put it on and I was just sat there. And do you know what? I was blown away. I forgot how perfect this film is. I think George Miller has come back stronger than he's ever been.
Yeah.
Charlize Theron, is that
Charlize? Yeah, well done.
Absolutely epic in this.
Mm-hmm. Furiosa.
If you haven't seen the film, I'd be very surprised, because everyone I know who's seen it and loved it. But it's this real simple concept again. Charlize Theron is playing a woman that has help from her female prisoners. And it's really just to rebel against this immortal Joe, who's the ruler of their land. Immortal Joe is one of the most harrowing, weirdest, wackiest characters that reminds me of something off He-Man. He was very weird with his white hair and this mask. Tom Hardy isn't really used in this film. Everyone praised him, but he's just on the front of this truck all the way through, just kind of...
With a weird accent.
It's very odd, but it doesn't matter, because all the effects and everything that they've done is done practically. There's some CGI, of course, but you know how much time they've spent in this desert doing these massive stunts, massive explosions that they really do. It's not like Michael Bay when they get all these just random explosions. You feel the explosion because he's actually blowing the truck up. He's not just adding in loads and loads and loads of kind of over-the-top flames. It's one of the best films I've seen in 10 years, and it is action from the moment it starts. That you go straight in, remember, because it's just you go straight in, you don't know what the hell's going on, and it's that for an hour and a half, and you don't breathe.
Yeah, superb beginning as well.
It's a wonderful action film, but a wonderful film, full stop. That's why it did so well in all the awards.
Yes.
It was a big award season player. Yep. Great movie. Yep.
Just perfect, isn't it?
Yeah, and the effects you mentioned there, like the rigging of some of the vehicles. You know, there's that one big vehicle where you've got the guitarist who's got the strings playing away. That's so cool.
And those guys swinging on those big poles
letting go. Yeah.
It's absolutely gripping.
Oh, what a day. What a beautiful day.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed this.
That's been great.
A fun topic. My heart is beating like Chev Chelios's.
I'm not buffing you.
All right, Tim, I didn't ask. Put the ego on this one. Bloody hell, I could do better.
A lot better. About a lot better, what have social media come up with? Because I'm sure they're probably better than our choices.
Hey, they've come up with some corkers. So on Twitter, we've got Chris at Kills811 who said Die Hard, Speed.
Yes!
And Terminator 2, of course.
All good.
Absolutely. Katie at Out of Time said Terminator 2, Aliens, and John Wick.
Aliens.
So Aliens was the one that came off my list this morning.
It? Oh my God.
It's a bit, I don't know. I just look at it as a sci-fi.
But it is an action film.
It is.
Yeah. Very true. Joe Flores at Metal Fan in Black said the first missing in action. Rambo 2.
Oh, Rambo.
Yeah, and Commando as well.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Gidget von LaRue at Gidget von LaRue said Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah. Masterpiece. You haven't seen it.
I've seen one of them. Which one have I seen?
The fucking fourth one where there's the alien at the end.
Oh, the crystal skull.
Yeah, but I've seen the first one. What's the first one?
Oh, Temple of Doom?
I don't know.
Oh, what? Oh, you're supposed to be a huge Indiana Jones fan.
I always lose track of what the actual titles are.
Right.
They also said The Thing and Die Hard.
The Thing's horror for me. I've always talked about it.
It's horror, it's sci-fi, but there's plenty of action.
Yeah.
I'm having that then.
Victoria Nomova at Victoria Russo said The Dark Knight.
I guess it is an action film, and a brilliant film.
But also agreed with each of you saying Mad Max Fury Road and John Wick.
Lovely.
Beautiful.
Shari Zaza at Zed Grammy Zed, The Wild Bunch at Sam Peckinpah.
Yeah, never seen it.
Oh, it's gory. But good. The French Connection and Built. I'm not familiar with Built, I'll be honest.
No, nope, I'll check it out.
But if it's action, hey, we'll go see it. Lucy Straker at Lucy Straker Co. said The Dark Knight, Aliens, and Captain America's Civil War.
It is an action-packed movie.
And it's one of the best films of many years.
It's superb.
Mm. Craig E. at Night Batman said Predator. Oh, I'm surprised they never said that.
Yeah, it's up there.
Demolition Man, of course.
Yes.
Oh, and The Expendables.
Yeah.
It is action, it's just shit.
The best Twitter handle I've seen all week, Obi-Wan Shinobi.
I love it.
But instead of the A, it's a 4. That's really cool.
Oh, genius.
Check him out at Obi-Wan Shinobi. He said Police Story.
Yeah. Old school, yeah.
Great stuff.
Ong Bak.
Masterpiece.
And The Raid.
The Raid is one of the greatest films ever.
And a cracking sequel for that matter too.
Oh.
And then Kelly at Kelly's a Blade also said The Raid, John Wick and Casino Royale.
It is an action movie.
It's a good film.
Yeah.
And then over at Facebook, we've got Kevin Crichton, who said The Raid 2.
Yep.
Hard Boiled.
Yeah.
And Zulu.
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Andrew Donlan said Point Break, Mad Max, Fury Road, and Desperado.
Point Break is amazing.
Oh. Yeah, Desperado is a great movie. Yeah, as
well. Indeed.
Good choices.
Then Rab Bruce said Robocop.
Yes.
It goes without saying, isn't it?
It is.
Mm-hmm. Kill Bill and Dread.
Yes, it's basically a rip-off of The Raid, but yeah.
Pretty much. And then finally, we got Darren Wadsworth, who said The Killer, Con Air.
That was the one that came out of my list. I brought Demolition Man out and dropped
so
that one.
So good.
It is. And his final choice was The Crow.
There's very little action in that. Mm. It's a great movie, though.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Great choices for social media.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I think so. And what a fun topic it's been.
Ah, good luck topping that.
Yeah, well, it is my shout after all. So I'm going to be a bit cheeky. So I did have a topic in mind for the next episode, but I want next episode to be so much fun. So I'm going to park that one and I'm going to thank Hal, one of our listeners, who came up with the topic from the last episode. So I want us to go a little bit more deeper and let's get a little bit more musical. We're going to talk about our top three films about music.
Whee! Yay!
You are tearing me apart, Lisa!
We've been to our View Cinema to watch The Disaster Artist, based on the true story of the greatest friendship of all time and the greatest movie of all time. During an acting class in the 1990s, nervous actor Greg Sestero is in awe of brash and confident classmate Tommy Wiseau. The two embark on a friendship which takes them to Los Angeles, the home of Hollywood. After experiencing a number of knockbacks, they decide to take matters in their own hands and make a movie. The rest, they say, is history. The film stars James Franco, Dave Franco, Seth Rogen, and Alison.
Rogen.
Oh, bollocks.
Nearly.
It was such a good intro as well.
Oh, never mind.
Shit the bed.
I have.
So it's got Seth
Rogen.
Thank you.
There we go. Can we get that?
No.
They're shaking their heads. No. And Alison Brie, who I didn't get to complete. So this is a tricky one to throw out, but I'm going to throw it to Mark because, Mark, you've pretty much spoken to the entire cast of the original film, The Room. You're pretty much bezzy mates with Wiseau himself.
Yeah, I'd say that.
So, is this film a masterpiece or is it cheap, 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 cheap?
It's a real difficult one because I sometimes regret being too over the top and using the word masterpiece when it shouldn't be valid. This was an absolute masterpiece in filmmaking and everything you could ever, ever ask for. And I am so in love with James Franco right now. Ben, you didn't really like this guy 6 months ago.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
He's my favourite guy on the planet right now, on the Tommy planet.
Yes!
He is fantastic.
Ben.
I'm going to upset you here, I think.
No!
Oh my God, no!
I liked it, but I didn't love it.
Ah!
It was lacking something that I will discuss in greater detail as we go on. But I enjoyed it, and Franco is magnificent, no doubt about it.
It's a joy. It's an absolute joy. And Franco is spot on, as Wiseau himself. I genuinely cannot think of anybody who could do a better job than old Jamesy boy. The soundtrack complements it beautifully with such guilty pleasure, because The Room, let's face it, as much as we love it, it is a guilty pleasure, but there is a lot of fun, a lot of dedication. Ah, two thumbs up.
Should we break down James Franco himself? Because he is the main thing, and this is his passion project, isn't it? This is the reason he's spent the last 2 years doing everything he can to make the world fall in love with Tommy Wiseau. So you just said then you couldn't imagine anyone else doing it.
Mm-mm.
At times I forgot it was James Franco. Mm-hmm. I really did. Mm-hmm. I didn't think, oh, it is actually Tommy Wiseau. But the face, the eye slightly shut, the hair. When I saw set pictures in magazines and online, I wasn't buying into it. I was like, I'm not quite sure. When you watch his characteristics and the way he is and his movements and everything about him, he is Tommy Wiseau.
He is. And it's not just the vocals. He captures Tommy's accent, but it's the mannerisms. It's the essence of the man as well as the accent. And the thing that got me and the thing that Mark and I especially were laughing at a lot during the screening was the laugh. He captures Tommy's little giggly laugh perfectly, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. And no other... I didn't think anybody could ever throw and catch a ball like Tommy. But hey, Franco surprised himself. That scene where they're just chucking a ball to each other and he's just hopelessly missing every bit of it. It is the little mannerisms. It's the tiny little bits to study that you don't think a lot of actors get. Franco was Wiseau.
Yeah. And you know he sat there for hours and hours studying so much footage. I read that he had spoke to Tommy himself and Tommy had given him all the stuff that no one else has ever seen. So, you mm-hmm. know, in the film, we keep seeing this documentary going
yes.
on.
Yeah.
He's actually sat down and watched that. So some of that stuff that you didn't even make it to the big screen. Imagine how bad that material must be.
Jesus.
Oh my God, I want to watch it so much. So much.
If we can get that from Greg.
Please.
I will bring it for us all.
Please. Let's do it.
I think one of the things that this film does so well, as did Greg Sestero's book on which this is based, is it made you understand why Greg would go along with a weirdo such as Tommy. You know, on the surface of it, you think, why would anyone hang out with this dude? Why would anyone trust him to make a film? But it's because he instills self-belief into Greg. Greg was this floundering actor, didn't think he was going anywhere. And Tommy was like, no, we can do this. We can make our own destiny. We'll go to Los Angeles. We can make this happen. And someone instilling that self-belief into you, it does make you want to go along with them and trust them. And I think the film sells that really well.
Yeah, it's a really good point, because it's the money as well. Like,
oh,
we don't
always.
We always know the film was made for $6 million or whatever it is. But when you see him just turning up in a really nice Mercedes, he turns up in decent clothes. Well, they're expensive. They don't look decent.
Yeah.
But you do actually see the fact that money is no option. The fact he's just got an apartment in LA and doesn't tell anyone and gets there and goes, oh, I haven't been there for a few years. How much would that be costing? He must be a multi-millionaire.
Yeah.
And you see when Greg's so surprised that he's like, yeah, we can just go and live there for a few months. Don't worry about it. You know, it's the power he's got is just astonishing.
They see a little bit of something that they don't have themselves within each other. You know, you got Tommy with so much self-confidence. He pretty much fills an entire room with it. Whereas with Greg, there's a humbleness about him. And the two together are magic.
You've just mentioned there, obviously, Ben, you were talking about Dave Franco as Greg.
Yes.
What do we think? Because on the trailer and stuff, I never saw much of him. And I feel like I know Greg because we've spoke to him on Skip to the End, we've spoke to him on the separate podcast, but I think he's absolutely awesome.
Yeah, it took me a while, actually. I thought he was a bit rickety at the start of the film, and I was worried that he wasn't going to be able to pull it off, but I was wrong. By the end of the film, I thought he was fantastic. I think he did equal work to his brother, and he even got top billing. I think that was James doing his brother a solid, because his name came up first in the credits. The one thing I think that let Dave Franco down was that piss-poor fake beard he was wearing.
Oh, my God.
It looked atrocious, didn't it?
That's it. It kind of ruined it for me. And when he shaved it off and did the whole baby face scene, that was the first time I thought, yeah, you actually look now like Greg. Everything else before that, I just can't take it seriously. You need to grow a proper beard.
Yeah, and it can't have been that hard for him to grow a bloody beard.
Well, I don't know. I've tried. Still difficult.
So let me talk about why I didn't love this film. I thought when the film leaned into the comedy of it, the fact that Tommy is an innately humorous person, I thought it was great. I thought the impression that Franco did was spot on. I thought the delivery of his lines, of his actions was great, and we were laughing heartily all through it. But when they then decided to lead into the drama, so the relationship drama between Tommy and Greg, I found my attention drifting. Mm. The drama just didn't work for me. I didn't find it compelling, and I just wanted them to get back into the comedy side of it. So the comedy worked like gangbusters, but the drama not so much for me.
Which leads me to my favourite section of the film, the actual filming of The Room.
Mm-hmm.
And Seth Rogen, there
well
we go.
Done.
Thank you. Oh, sweating over here. He was a delight as Sandy. I loved him. Every time he was on the screen, he punched comedy gold. With just his little quips about, does he know where her vagina is? You know, where's obviously the infamous belly button boff scene. But
we are boff cast, aren't we?
Always with the boffing.
But he was great. He was absolutely fantastic. And we did have the movie Masturbate a few episodes ago with Seth Rogen being pulled out of the pot. And I think this was a really great role for him. I loved him. It was a pleasure every time he was sort of appearing on the screen.
The trailer didn't really give us anything apart from him just doing the cut,
yeah,
start, you know, fire. He was in it a lot more than I thought. And you were right, I loved him on screen. And he wasn't being too Seth Rogen.
No.
He wasn't being too much.
He was really quippy.
Yeah.
I really liked that. The whole thing with the bank as well, about the bottomless money pit that Wiseau seems to have.
The surprise element of, oh my God, he actually has got the money.
Yeah. And again, that's why I liked that kind of aspect of the film, because that's when they were leaning into the comedy of it, the absurdity, the innate absurdity of the whole enterprise. But then sometimes they tried too hard to bog it down in drama.
That's the stuff that might get the Oscars, though, the serious side.
You've got to have an Oscar.
The only thing that this could get an Oscar for is Franco's balls-to-the-wall performance.
Not cinematography.
Speaking of balls-to-the-wall, Zac Efron as Chris R. and Josh Hutcherson as Denny. That sequence is, obviously, we know that the film has that sequence on the rooftop, so we saw it as the alleyway. But I just loved how pumped that Chris R. was getting himself into the scene for, and just poor little Denny, that little prick Denny in the corner, just absolutely shaking in his boots before the scene actually happened.
I thought he was great as Denny, Josh Hutcherson. He just is Denny, I think. Yeah. He is just a
the
little prick.
The voice was so accurate. Yeah. It's scary. Was there a point when you're in the cinema and you actually had to stop and think, is this reality? Something we've watched, ripped to pieces, then fallen in love with as a rewatch, 2 years later is on a screen being remade by James Franco. I had to look around at Ben at one point and think, is this our golden day for all this podcast stuff we've done? Is this our payoff? It seems so surreal that we're reviewing a film about the worst film ever made.
Yeah, it was really odd because I know we were far from the first to jump on the Room bandwagon. It was, you know, the cult showings have been going on for many, many years. But when we got into it right at the start of this podcast, so we're talking 3 years ago, it wasn't that big a deal in this country, I don't think. And over the last 3 years, it's just got bigger and bigger. And then Greg released the book, of course. And then I remember when they announced that Franco was making this film and we were like, what the fuck? What? And now it's here and we've just seen it. That's crazy, isn't it?
It is. It's. I think one of the things that really messed with my head was when we then got to the scene of the film premiere. So we're getting them, you know, the payoff is that he's finished the film, he's got Greg to, I don't know how, all right, I'll come and watch this film with you, we're going to do it, it's the opening night, all the cast are there, and you're seeing the main key scenes reenacted moment for moment, scene for scene, and you just think, you're a mentalist, because he's done it for the exact same scene. And it works. It was watching The Room again for the very first time with a different set of cast. It's the most surreal moment. I actually had to look around at Ben and think, are we here now? Is this really happening? His ass is out. You see the crack of his ass.
Making movies.
Love to the belly button. Every key scene, the gun in the mouth. Yeah. I just like to watch you guys. All that, it was freaky.
It was weird. I liked especially that at the close of the film, they showed side-by-side comparison. So they had the real footage of The Room running on the left and then Franco's version on the right for several of the key scenes. That was brilliant.
The best scene was, you know, when they're drinking Scotchka and she's got the old tie around her head. And he's going, I'm tired, I'm wasted, I love you, Lisa. And he grabs onto his side. He grabs onto his side just like the real. And I love the fact that it is just so meticulous.
Yep. He's studied that for hours. The accuracy, he's more into it than we are. The only man in this world that is more obsessed in The Room than us.
I think we should have a room off.
Yeah, let's get him on and see who knows more about The Room, him or us.
I'd love
to. We'll take him down.
I think they took a bit of creative license with the end of the film. So when they have the premiere of the film within the film, the crowd obviously doesn't think it's a good film. They start laughing at it. And then Greg manages to convince Tommy that this is a triumphant moment. The crowd, you know, it's rapturous applause and laughter. Tommy gets on stage. Ha ha ha, here's my comedic movie. And that, I don't think that happened. Now, it's been a while since I read Greg's book, so I can't actually remember what the real reaction to the premiere was, but I'm sure it wasn't that.
I don't think it was.
I think what they've done there is they've shown what the reaction to the film is like now.
Yeah.
That's the reaction crowds give if you go to one of these midnight screenings at the Prince Charles Theatre in London or one of the big screenings in LA, New York. That's what you get now. So I like that. I thought that was a nice bit of creative license saying, you know, this isn't really what happened, but it is what happens now. This is a flash forward, if anything.
Yeah. When I spoke to the cast, they all said they cringed and were silent. You could hear a pin drop because it was shock. It was, what have you done? You told me you were going to put my breast in the scene for 2 minutes, not 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And I think it would have just been everyone just, oh my God, what's he done? But yeah, it's a nice stand up and cheer that motherfucker on.
There wouldn't have been an ending to the film if they didn't do that try, but it would have just been, oh fuck, that didn't go well. See you later.
And the very end of the credits, it's worth sticking around for. I mean, most people that are listening right now probably won't get to see this in the cinema. It might be a DVD or Blu-ray job because here in the UK, it's 3 screens, 3 times, and that's it. Next week, it's gone.
It's only out for 2 days. There are a couple of advanced screenings, and it's out for 2 days. Crazy.
That's ridiculous.
But we got Tommy Wiseau himself on screen alongside James Franco.
It was bizarre, wasn't it?
me and Ben were sat in the cinema, and some woman had come in to start cleaning, and she just looked up at the screen, and you could just see, like, what are you guys doing? Yeah. This is not Marvel. What are you doing? Paul, I even said to her, you probably think, what the hell is going on right now?
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. So we're all dyed-in-the-wall Room fans, so obviously we were going to enjoy this because we understand who Tommy Wiseau is and we understand how great James Franco's impression is. How do you think people who don't know The Room would relate to this? How do you think they would find this film?
That's a good question.
Because I think it would mean nothing to them. I think this film only works if you both know and love The Room.
I have talked about the impending release of this film to friends that have never seen The Room.
Yeah.
And they just think it looks weird. They don't understand why there's so much hype around this.
Yeah.
But again, that could be a good thing because then you open up the door to The Room, see how batshit crazy that film is, and allow the disaster artists to usher themselves in quietly and get the respect that I think it deserves. But yeah, a very weird reaction from people.
Yeah, because 90% of the success of the film is in Franco's impression.
Yeah.
If you don't know who Tommy Wiseau is, that won't mean a fucking thing to you.
Yeah, very true.
To answer you, Ben, I think everyone would stand up and walk out after 10 minutes. They'd be like, I just don't get this. This is ridiculous. It's no one will get their head around it.
No.
You know, we saw people in the cinema when we went the other day, and they would never stick around. Families just go in there thinking it's something about a bad film. They're not going to get it. Why is he wearing two belts? Why is his eyes like that? Why is he asking for more hairspray? Why is he having sex on set?
Why is he making love to a belly button?
I'm not sticking around for this shit.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I would love the whole world in this to break Avatar's record at the box office. But no, Ben, those people are just going to walk out.
Yeah. It's a real pity, though.
Yeah, and we want them to then discover The Room and fall in love and buy Tommy Wiseau boxer shorts and wear two belts and buy everything you can, but it's not the world we want.
I want Funko to make some Tommy Wiseau pops.
With one eye open, one eye closed.
Yeah. If you make them, Sully, if you're listening, I will buy them all. Is that fair? We'll all buy
Even if we sell 15
of them, that'll be great.
We'll have a stake in it. Can we have Lisa with the red dress? Perfect.
All of that.
So I think I'm ready to score this. How about you guys?
Yeah, let's do it.
Shall we? Mark, what's your score?
I can't say it's a 10 because that would be mental. So it's a very high 9. It really is probably going to be my film of the year unless Star Wars tops it. Just for the reason for my love and getting to witness this. It doesn't matter if it's the best film ever made. We've had it. We've got it, guys. We've got something we never thought would happen and it delivered. So for Franco's performance, 9 out of 10.
Smashing stuff, Ben.
I don't think it's a great film, and I think it only works if you understand The Room. That being said, Franco is magnificent in it. So I'm going to give it 8, and they're all for his performance, all
amazing.
Of those points.
For me, it's a 9 out of 10. I love this film. I cannot wait to see this again. I want to see The Room again, and then I want to see this. And I want that to continue for the rest of my life. So I think that would be a very good skip to the end, 9 out of 10.
Hi, babe. I have something for you.
What is it?
Just a little something.
It's competition time! Yeah! Oh yeah!
He's gone all red! Man.
Oh. He has gone red, hasn't he? He's nearly as red as his hair.
Yes!
You can't tie that!
Or my jumper or anything else red, yes. Like I'm the guy from Harry Potter.
You are big red.
Yes, that's my dream. That's everything I go for in life. If I could win a competition, it'd be to become Big Red. So let's move on from the Big Red discussion and talk about the prizes that we give here at Skip to the End. And if you listened to our last episode when we reviewed Justice League, We gave it a really good competition thanks to our friends at Warner Brothers. This is talking good shit, unlike the film. Unlike the film.
That was just shit.
Wow.
We gave away 6 watches, some journals, a pin set, a jacket, and all we asked you to do was tell us what rating did we give the film Justice League. So Gemma, what rating were we very generous and gave this film?
5.
Did you notice as well, guys, that a lot of people on social media were like, you were too generous.
Yeah.
And I thought we were quite harsh.
Yeah, there was a guy on Facebook who was having a bit of a conversation with you, and he was like, I can't believe your score. And I assumed he meant it should have been higher. And he's like, no, I'd have given it a 2. Yeah.
So we have a winner called Alistair Birchall, and you'll be winning that big bundle. And when you get it, put a photo up on Twitter and Facebook and show us you're wearing the 6 watches down your arm. Like big Tommy fan. With his 2 belts, I want to see you with your 6 watches. Yeah. Start a trend. Also, our good friends at Funko, Sully Man, you give us so many decent Funkos, it's crazy. Mwah. You gave us a set of Justice League, and all we asked you to do was, you know, you got all these cool Funkos. All you have to do is tell us who directed 80% of the film. So, Ben, who was it?
Zack Snyder.
Yes, and he did it badly. So, Laura Morris. That's fair. Come on, we said in a review it wasn't great.
Yeah. But Laura, I think his bits were better than Joss Whedon's bits.
Very true.
Yeah. He polished a turd. Laura Morris on Twitter will be getting them. And I want to see, you know, the photos with you, all these Funkos around you. But he didn't stop there. You know, Funko keep giving. So we had a Steppenwolf and an Aquaman. We had these exclusive ones. And all we said was, show us your pops. Really, really simple. Pops. Yes, not cocks. That would not be very good.
I wasn't even thinking
that. No, look
at Gemma's face. He looked at you when he said that as if that was what was on your mind.
Why did you laugh then? What's funny about pops?
Because I'm very awkward at the situation right now.
Brilliant. So this is the first winner that we had who's Dardy336, and he's got wrestling pops.
Excellent.
He's got a really nice collection.
Has he got a CM Punk?
If he has, we'll rob him.
If he has, he's not winning.
He's got everything. He's got he's got Chris Jericho. He's got Indiana Jones. Aww. He's got John. I think it's John Cena. I can't see anything in the box, but he's got some good stuff. But you know what? This competition was good. I like to see people interacting. So we had a couple of other people that came through. The first one we had was Chris, which is at Keels811. Now, this guy, I think, deserves a prize. Ooh. So we're going to send him some stuff.
Yeah.
He's got
stuff like a light box that says Skip to the End, which I love. He's got Star Wars, and he's actually got vinyls as well to go alongside the pop vinyls. He's got Axl Rose, he's got Amy Winehouse, Bowie.
David Bowie, he's
taken the vinyl thing very literally then.
I like that.
So I want to give him a prize. So we're going to send you some Funkos. I'm not going to tell you what, but you'll have a box, turn up to your house, and it'll be some nice prizes.
Awesome.
Cool.
But we're not going to stop there. So at Cornwolf has sent us, and I like thinking outside the box here, he did a video that was on for 18 minutes going about his whole collection. We all watched it today, didn't we?
We did.
And it was really good. And he's talking about his podcast. He's talking about the cinema tickets he's got, how we inspired him. Just to think about going on doing a whole YouTube video just to win some pops. I think you deserve something.
Yeah.
So another box of pops will be on its way to you.
Totally. Indeed.
And I really want to see a good photo of you, you know, with all your new pops in your collection. Yeah. We'll send you some good stuff.
Yeah.
God, we gave loads away on the last episode. We had a prototype for the Bruce Wayne pop, which is worth hundreds.
Oh, yeah.
And all we said was, you had to leave us an iTunes rating. So Johnny Yates has given us a 5-star rating, and we're going to send you this pop. If it goes on eBay, we're going to find you, and I mean this now, we'll hunt you down. I'm not going to kill your family this time, I'm just going to kill you.
Well, because that seems fair.
Yeah.
And finally, we had some nice Blade Runner t-shirts from Last Exit to Nowhere. The Blade Runner 2049. Ben, you were loving that with the jewelry design and everything else. We made it really simple. Who directed Blade Runner 2049? Ben?
Denis Villeneuve.
Exactly. So Chris, which is at Murphy's Boredom, got that right, and we'll be sending you one of those t-shirts. But guys, we can't stop now, can we? We need to give some stuff away.
Big time. Mm-hmm.
Did you see this week the Thing t-shirt that Dark Bunny brought out?
Yes.
Good, because you've both got one.
Oh, yes.
So we've got one for you. It's got the Outpost 31 design. It's a nice light blue colour. It's pretty sexy, isn't it? But they haven't just stopped there. They've given us a hoodie as well. So have you seen the grey hoodie?
Yeah.
With the lining?
Yes, with like fur. So if you are going out to Outpost 31, it would probably keep you warm enough.
Ish.
Who directed the Thing? Should we make it that simple?
Yeah.
Really, really cool. We don't just stop there. So Last Exit to Nowhere have done a Blue Harvest t-shirt, the original Star Wars title, and it's just the logo on the front, which the...
It was the fake title.
The production team were wearing those on set. So it's a really, really cool design. They've nearly sold out, but they've put one aside for us. Who directed the original Star Wars? So Episode 4, A New Hope. I want to give a box of pops away. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to speak to Sully and we're going to put a box of pops with loads of random different ones. And all we're going to do is give it away to someone that gives us a 5-star iTunes rating.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's going to have loads of random stuff in there. So I like that. I like the idea that they don't know what they're going to get. There could be some elf. There could be some gremlins. There could be, you name it, it could be in that box. Couple more prizes. Did you see this week that we did a tweet for a Pitch Perfect free bundle?
Yeah.
Indeed.
I'm not that keen about seeing that film,
I couldn't
if I'm
give
honest.
A shit,
no.
Not really on top of my list.
But people on social media, because we had nearly 1,000 retweets for that, which
yeah.
is insane. So
Blimey.
There's a bag, a t-shirt, a hat, and a jumper. Let's make it really simple. What character does Anna Kendrick play in that film?
Mm-hmm.
Guys, do you really think I'd forget and not get a Disaster Artist prize
oh,
in this episode?
That's more like it.
So, this is a good one. Warner Brothers have come to us and they've got some exclusive t-shirts with tuxedos on, which you can only get from this competition. You can't go out and buy them. You get a t-shirt, you get some Tommy Wiseau pens, a globe of Tommy's world. There is going to be a whole big bundle, and these literally can't be bought. So they're really, really exclusive. We will end up keeping these, won't
we? Of course we will.
Because they're brilliant. What rating did we just give the Disaster Artist? It's that simple. All you need to do to enter these competitions, because I see people tweet us and ask, you can tweet us your answer, you can go on Facebook and Facebook us your answer. Facebook us, that sounds about right?
Yeah,
why not?
You can email, you can go on Instagram, you can just do whatever you want. As long as you get the answer to us one way or another, you have entered the competition, and we'll come back in 2 weeks and I'll announce the winners of all this incredible shit. Is that all right? Sound good to you?
Yeah.
Sounds good to me.
Brilliant.
Anyway, how is your sex life?
It's now time for Movie Masturbate, that section of the show where we pick a name out of the pot and we describe our favourite performance from that particular person. So on the last episode, we picked out Woody Harrelson.
Yes.
A guy that I don't think gets a lot of credit.
Not enough.
But we bloody love him over here at Skip Towers. So because of that reason, I think now's a good time to talk about our favourite performance from Mr. Harrelson himself. So Mark, can you please tell me your favourite one in particular?
I'm going to go with one of the most watched films of his that I've enjoyed since I was a young kid. Not an old kid, a young kid.
That's when you're 13.
So I'm going with... I'm definitely going to go with this decision. It's been tough. Billy from White Men Can't Jump.
Oh,
good choice.
Great choice.
Because it's just such a nostalgic trip. I remember watching this as a child and absolutely loving it. He is not a great character because he's kind of a hustler. He's always letting his selfishness win, and he shouldn't because he could get far. He has it all at one point. He has all this money. He has Rosie Perez as his missus who stands by him even though he keeps losing money. And it's still that greed that always defeats him. And he's not a great character, but I love him when he's cocky.
Yeah.
You just mentioned Wesley Snipes on the topic. Him and Wesley on this, that chemistry on screen is they're just bouncing off each other. They're constantly ripping each other, but they're a team.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it. I think this film is just great because it shows the kind of under message of racism in a weird way. It does. When you think about the actual inside moral of the story, it is the whole black and white, but it's not focusing too much on that. You've got the element of just comedy. And these two are utterly, utterly incredible on screen, but we need to focus more on Woody Harrelson. I can't be sitting here. This isn't Wesley's time. I absolutely love it. It's a solid buddy comedy, isn't it? From start to finish. Billy is a chump. He is the ultimate chump of all time. This is one thing that blew my mind when I was researching this. He didn't have hardly any stand-ins. He actually learnt the sport of basketball. So when you see those shots and those scenes he's doing, he's playing it. And this, for me, was the first film where it proved he wasn't just the face from Cheers.
Yeah.
And that's the credit he needs to get, because it's very hard to break away when you're an iconic character on such an iconic show. For me, I've not seen such a good double act since sort of Lethal Weapon, stuff like that.
Yeah.
These two were made to be on screen together. And for that reason alone, let's focus again back on Woody. He nailed this film.
Aww.
He is great in it. I can't remember the ins and outs, I must admit. I haven't seen this film in well over a decade, but I remember enjoying it. And the thing that sticks out is how great they were as a duo. Going off on a slight tangent, is it just me or are they not
that many great buddy comedies anymore.
They have disappeared. We have Daddy's Home, and that's not great. Damn. That's really not great, I'm afraid. Yeah. I know it's got our boy Will Ferrell in it, but... Mm-hmm.
It's also got Mel Gibson in the new one.
Yeah, true.
What's the last one that was any good? There was one with Ryan Gosling, which I didn't think was
The Nice Guys.
The Nice Guys was okay.
That's the closest
I really
we
enjoyed
got.
That, yeah. But I really enjoyed
there's
it.
There's nothing anymore. No. And it's a shame because there used to be so many.
Yeah. I don't know if Kevin Hart and The Rock are trying to revive this kind of buddy comedy because we saw it with Central Intelligence, which wasn't that bad.
Yeah, it was okay.
But that's it. It was okay.
Yeah.
Nothing that's made you go, oh, no. Yes!
Not in a long time. Mm.
It's a shame.
So Ben, come on. What you got?
Oh, come on. This is bang obvious. It's Mickey Knox from Natural Born Killers.
Yeah, so have I.
Yeah, that's me. So, Mark, you mentioned there with his role in White Men Can't Jump, it was nice to see him do something different from Cheers, and you're absolutely right. And when he made that film, he was still in Cheers. I think he made it the last year he was in Cheers. Natural Born Killers was one of the first films he did after he left, and it's such a departure from the character of Woody Boyd, this dim-witted barman, to playing an actual psychopath serial killer in Mickey Knox. Knox is a total piece of shit. But you can't help rooting for him because he's so cool and self-possessed. He knows who he is, he knows what he wants, he knows how to get it. He's able to turn on a dime as well. So one minute he's friendly and affable, the next minute he's a total psycho and he's murdering you. One of the best examples of this is in the prison scene where he's arrested and the camera crew are in there and he's telling the camera crew a joke and they're getting looser and the guards are getting looser and they're loving his humour, and then he uses it to his advantage to grab one of the guards' guns and that leads to the escape. It's the ability to play both sides of that character so smoothly. He's absolutely wonderful.
Confident yet psychotic, charismatic yet dangerous, charming but deadly. No other person could ever fill the shoes of Mickey Knox. You shouldn't like him.
Mm-hmm.
He's a goddamn murderer. You should not like him for whatever reason. But my opinion changed of Woody Harrelson as soon as I saw this film. So this is my very first rewatch choice when I joined the podcast.
Yep.
And this was a film that I watched very regularly when I was 13 and 14. I shouldn't have.
No,
I should
it's
have been
a bit of a hardcore one for that age.
But hey, you know what? You don't inherit the love of film. It's born with you. And this film completely grabbed me when I was a kid. I just completely believed his animal connection that he had with Juliette Lewis. He understood exactly what Oliver Stone wanted out of this film, and it made him into this sort of anti-hero of the 1990s. Mm. I mean, it is a satire. This is America popularizing these crazy-ass murderers that should not get any bit of media attention, but they glorified him. And with a face like Harrelson's, hell, you're going to buy it.
I know we're not here to talk about the film specifically, and we have done it before, but it's one of the grand ironies that this film was supposed to be about how the media, you know, feeds on violence and other people buy into it. But then that's what this film did. Mm-hmm. It was trying to satirise that, but it just did it. People love the I love this film because how bloody violent it is.
Yes.
And one of the main reasons is because of Woody, because he's just killing people left, right, and centre and blowing a hole in Wayne Gale's hand.
Oh,
Even though we've done it as a rewatch, I want to watch it again with you two.
Oh, me too.
As soon as possible.
It's a classic. It's the reason I gave it 10.
Wow. I've enjoyed this masturbate.
It was a quickie.
But the memory remains. Whose turn is it to pick out?
I would think it's social media first.
Yeah, let's do that, Gemma. Bloody hell.
Bloody.
I just want to get juiced up again.
Oh.
Degrading, which I hate. So yes, let's listen to the social media responses. So Ben, what have you got for us?
First up on Twitter, we've got Jim Bob Squarepants.
Best name ever.
Indeed, at Vintage GT. He said, he agrees with you, Mark. He said, gotta be White Men Can't Jump. It's a nostalgic feel-good movie for me.
See, he did it better than me. Aww. Jim, you've got a job.
Yeah, get him leaving. On Facebook, we've got Joe Myers. He said, I want to say Mickey Knox in Natural Born Killers because I love that film, as do we all. Mm-hmm. But I have to go with his Oscar-nominated portrayal of Larry Flint in The People versus Larry Flint.
Wow,
so good.
So good. Him and Courtney Love are unreal in that film.
Another one I need to watch again soon.
Big time. Back on Twitter, JB at James Bottrill has said, Tallahassee from Zombieland. He's genuinely having a blast. Hashtag time to nut up or shut up.
But the greatest line ever as well, Bill fucking Murray.
Yeah.
Superb film. Twitter again, Anna Pink at Anna247 has said, I rather like him as Carter Page III in The Walker. I'm not familiar. Have either of you seen this?
No. I've not.
That's the first time I've heard that.
Let's pop that one on the list then.
Mm. Big time.
On Instagram, we've got Garrick4, who said he's great in Zombieland, but I instead choose Seven Psychopaths.
That is a good, good movie.
It's a really underrated movie. Gemma, you're looking like you've not seen it.
I've heard of it, but I've not seen it.
Get it watched.
Get it watched, because it's written and directed by Martin McDonagh, who's also directed and written the upcoming Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri, which also stars Woody Harrelson.
You know my feelings about Three Billboards.
Yeah. Get involved. Again, on Twitter, Mrs. Carr at Woolen Hat says, I kind of like him in 7 pounds. I'm a sucker for that movie. That's the one with Will Smith, isn't it?
Yeah, terrible film.
And shite.
And, you know, plot twist.
The film's boss, but you know.
But plot twist, the jellyfish did it.
So there you go.
There you go. Trust me, don't watch this film. I'm really sorry, Will and Hat.
Sorry, Will and Hat. Zombie Kitty Podcast at Zed Kitty Podcast. Can we all please keep the subject to Rampart? Please tell me you'll have seen Rampart.
No.
Oh, God, it's so good. He plays a corrupt LA cop. It's based on the real-life Rampart division of the LAPD that were corrupt as fuck. It's real good, and I believe it's on Amazon here in the UK as well.
I'll get it watched.
Get involved.
I think corrupt so Harrelson would be quite fun to watch.
I'm putting this out there. I think films about corrupt cops might be my favourite thing in the world.
It's so much fun.
Yeah. Top three films about corrupt cops. Get it on the list. We've got three topics from this episode.
Ready for next Brilliant. Year.
Wayne Saunders on Facebook has said, recently saw Lost in London, Woody's directorial debut as well as starring in it. He plays a send-up of himself and I found him charming and hilarious.
Ooh,
I've not heard of this.
I did hear about this. Yeah? It was quite revolutionary for film, but I wouldn't mind giving it a whirl at some point.
It'll probably be out on DVD in the new year.
Could be.
Check it out.
Get involved. Back to Twitter, Patrick Saxon at Patrick Saxon has said, I liked him in War of the Planet of the Apes and he was weirdly amazing in Defender. Let's take both of those. War for the Planet of the Apes. Holy shit. I only saw this for the first time recently. What a fucking film that is, by the way.
I know. And we were ignorant. Ignorant! In the fact that we didn't watch that.
Yeah.
So me and Ben literally got my Blu-ray last week, sat down together. We were both like, why the hell did we not see this in the cinema?
Yeah.
Absolutely astonishing. One of the best trilogies in modern day.
Oh, absolutely right. It's damn near flawless. And they get gradually better. The first one was good. Second one, great. This one is just off the charts.
You'd never hear about that.
Yeah.
No.
and Harrelson's absolutely fantastic.
Amazing.
And then Defender, he said he's weirdly amazing in. I've not seen that one, but it's kind of a weird superhero film,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, I heard about this too.
I think it's kind of like Super with Rain Wilson. It's meant to be on a similar tack
like
to
that. I'm sold.
Yeah. And then finally, James Lyle at JamesLyle79 has said, I'm going for Roy Munton in Kingpin.
Yay!
I thought you were going to have that, Pooch.
Oh, it was third. I think it was Tallahassee, close second.
Yeah. He's also said, Woody's comic timing was so good in this. Still one of my favourite comedies as well.
Oh, yeah.
I think we all agree with that.
Yeah. I love the reasons from social media. Mm. They don't just say a name. They give us a good justification.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I milked a cow. That's not a cow. We have a bull.
Talking of bull. It's okay. Time to masturbate again. So whose turn is it? Is it mine, I think?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. Do you want a drum
too
roll?
Too much pressure.
Drum roll?
Yeah, let's not break a tradition. Oh, my Lord.
Who is it?
It's not the one I want, it's damn good.
Right.
On the next episode, we will be masturbating over Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah! Oh, my goodness me!
You can love someone deep inside your heart, and there is nothing wrong with it. If a lot of people love each other, the world would be a better place to live.
Rewatch this time is Idiocracy, a film from 2006 written and directed by Mike Judge. In the film, Luke Wilson and Maya Rudolph star as Joe and Rita, who are two average people chosen for a one-year suspended animation military experiment. When the experiment is completely forgotten, they're awoken 500 years in the future. The America they find themselves in is a dystopian nightmare, where commercialism and stupidity are the order of the day, and the president is a totally unqualified, aggressive buffoon. So nothing like today, then. The film's written and directed by Mike Judge, as they say, who's known for Beavis and Butthead and Office Space, and it also co-stars Dax Shepard and Terry Crews. Now, prior to this being the rewatch, neither of you two had seen the film, had you?
No.
But
you were familiar with and fans of Mike Judge's work. I know we all love Office Space.
Of course.
And Mark, I know you're a big Beavis and Butthead fan, same as me. So, I'm really excited to see what you think about this film. Now, you may have given a little bit away, Mark, by mentioning that you've seen it thrice. So I'm going to throw it to you first. Tell me your thoughts on Idiocracy.
Absolutely amazing.
Yay!
How a movie about being so dumb and annoying with such weird, intelligent characters and so well written and so witty, but the most scariest film I've ever seen in my entire life, because this is supposed to be set in 2505.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're fucking only about 10 years away from this shit.
We're in it.
And we're probably in it now.
In the long haul.
Brilliant, Ben. Let's forget the social sort of satire aside.
Yeah.
I laughed out loud probably for a good hour, and this film's only about 80 minutes. I thought the special effects were fantastic, and I think that Mike Judge is a genius, and he was robbed in the way that it was taken off him and didn't market it and didn't put it out there. Absolutely loved it, Ben. Thank you, because I've just got even more respect for Mike Judge than I had last week.
I'm so happy to hear all of that. Gemma, are you on the same tack there?
Yeah, I am. This is also a reminder to not just us three and our fabulous listeners, but also the world, that Maya Rudolph...
So good.
Oh, I love her so much. She's really great in Big Mouth too, as the lady hormone monster.
Yes, yes.
I love anything that she does, basically. But this film, here's the thing. I think she's the best thing in this film. And of course, we do have Patrick Wilson, but whenever Rita was on the screen...
Patrick Wilson?
I've never heard of him. I've heard of Luke Wilson.
Thank you.
Oh, sorry.
That's me correcting someone on the name. This is a episode 85.
You make the most of it, Mark, because I have a feeling the tables are going to turn very, very soon.
I like Luke Wilson. Correct.
But Maya Rudolph is the one and only in this film. Terry Crews, every single scene he was in, he just stole the show.
My man.
Yeah, he's so good. Brilliant. I love the little quirks. I love the fact that they made Starbucks into this latte gentleman's club. Brilliant.
Gentleman's latte. Full body latte.
Cracking film. Really great film.
It's so good. And something that Mark mentioned there is that the studio didn't support it at all. It sat on the shelf in the Fox archives. They put it out a year after it was due to go out.
Fox. There we go. That's why.
Yeah, precisely. They didn't spend any money on marketing, and they only released it in 7 US cities. And they didn't even release it in New York, which is the biggest market outside of California. They fucked Judge over royally. And that's why it's gone on to be a cult success. The same way Office Space was. Yep. That wasn't a big film at the cinemas, but it's lived on in VHS, DVD, Blu-ray. It's such a silly, silly comedy on the surface, and there's a lot of silly shit we're going to quote in a minute, I'm sure. But it is a really vicious satire of modern-day commercialism and anti-intellectualism that was satirical then when it was made in 2006, but is so much more so now. And someone in an interview not so long ago, I think it was when Donald Trump was running for the presidency, said to Mike Judge, "Oh man, you're a prophet. You saw this coming." And he said, "Oh, I'm not a prophet. I got it wrong by 490 years. Yeah. But, this is the world that we're either in or vastly quickly moving towards. But it's brilliant. I mean, we're going to come to all the individual actors shortly, but let's start with the man at the top. Let's start with Joe himself, average Joe, Luke Wilson. I think he is absolutely perfectly cast, because he is a great everyman. He's a blandly handsome guy. He's distinctly average in every way, and I don't mean that as an insult to him. I would say the same thing about Tom Hanks. The reason why Tom Hanks has been enduringly successful for 30 years is because he has that average everyman quality, and I think Wilson's got a bit of that, and it needed someone like him to make this role work.
I loved him. I thought he was, for me, he's the best thing in this film. I thought he was absolutely outstanding, but you're never really going to give him that big, like, Mission Impossible film. He's never going to pull it off. He's never going to be your Ben Affleck. He's not going to be your Tom Cruise, is he?
No.
But I love him. I absolutely love him. I've not seen enough of him. I mean, I know there's a lot more out there, and I should now start... We're not going to do a mass debate over him, but he's an actor that now, I forget how good he is.
Yeah.
And for the whole film, he's absolutely outstanding, and he's never... a prick. He's never arrogant. He's never like, you don't want to ever punch him. He's a likable character in everything, but he is always Luke Wilson in everything he's in.
Yeah, pretty much.
But I like Luke Wilson, so it's good.
Yeah.
He's us. He's the viewer. He's going around this place going, what on earth is happening to a society I once knew? He's great. He's an enjoyable person to watch. I find him very humble too, so he's not somebody that's going to go balls to the wall and be this absolutely obnoxious guy. But when you do start seeing him try to make the changes with the society and obviously growing those crops, you want him to be successful. You want him to succeed because he's a nice guy.
He is, yeah. There was a time when he was pretty successful back there in the early 90s. He was in things like Royal Tenenbaums and Old School. You know, he was the straight man in Old School as well.
To be fair, yeah.
And over the recent years, he's done a lot of indies. He's done TV. He did that Cameron Crowe show, Roadies, which was okay. I liked
not
him
bad.
That. Not bad. But yeah, he's never really kind of hit the heights that he had back then. But he's perfect, absolutely perfect for this role.
Yeah. It worked. It worked really well.
Alongside him, as you've mentioned, Gemma, is Maya Rudolph as the main lead. She is just one of the most sort of multi-talented people on earth. She was one of the big standouts on Saturday Night Live a few years back when she was on there. Mm-hmm. She's brilliant with him in this.
Yeah, Minnie Riperton's daughter. Did you know?
I liked her in, was it Bridesmaids?
Yes.
Yes, and that's, it sounds weird. It's one of those people that now you mention it, I'm like, okay, she's in that. She's done a lot more. But again, she's never the main thing.
Yeah.
But in this, she was outstanding. And I'm not going to talk, actually. It's rude. I'm just going to talk about
Oh, dear.
I don't want to have an episode where I just thought she was quite... There's something... a nice feature. No. I'm not going to.
Two of them, I imagine.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
there's a lady present.
She's married to Paul Thomas Anderson. Do you know that?
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. Power couple.
I know, right? Yeah.
But she has wonderful expressions to her face. Mm-hmm. When we see her with the photograph of her taken as a prostitute for a police, she's just sort of like... just this sort of double chin sort of... what the fuck is going on? She's great.
She just doesn't take herself seriously.
Exactly.
In everything you see, and let's be honest about Bridesmaids and stuff, she just goes with the flow, has fun, and will do a lot of stuff where most women be like, I'm not doing that on camera, I'm not doing this. It's no, it'll make me look bad. She does not give a shit.
She has a wonderful singing voice as well. Which
she does.
She used it a lot in her impressions on Saturday Night Live. She used to do people like Beyonce and Whitney Houston and would nail it every time. She could do the impression and the powerful singing as well.
I need to watch some of the old episodes.
Yeah, Maya Rudolph rules.
Yeah, you got to check. Have you seen Big Mouth on Netflix?
No, and everyone keeps telling me I need to watch this.
I just love the way she talks. Like this. It's really, now go to bed and cry till you can't get any tears out. It's so good. You will love
I've heard a lot about it.
You will love it. And she is arguably the best thing along with Nick Kroll. But Maya Rudolph.
Yeah. There's something you mentioned there, Mark. You said the effects are good. Now, I'm going to disagree with that slightly.
Budget?
No.
That's it. Yeah. That's it. They stiffed Mike Judge on the budget, so he was on a shoestring. And they're dodgy, the effects, but endearingly so. I like them. They're kind of enjoyably cheap.
Like Encyclopedia 95.
but it's... They're better than they should be for this.
Oh, yeah.
So when we first see that lorry go over that guy and he gets sprayed out, that looked good. That was pretty good. Okay, it's not sort of Thor Ragnarok sort of budget where you get that massive stadium, but I liked it. It looked good. It's really good.
The rehabilitation night.
Oh, yeah, with the big monster truck thing.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
But the explosions and the stuff, I thought it looked better than those special effects should not be that good for such a low budget film.
I think it kind of doesn't quite look real, but that fits because the society isn't supposed to be real. It's supposed to be slightly alien to us. So the fact that the effects are slightly off, it fits in with the film. A lot of the things I really enjoy about this film are the quick side jokes. When I was watching this the other day on DVD, I kept pausing things that I hadn't noticed before, and I've seen this film so many times. So there's a bit where Joe is running away from the police and there's a sign behind him that's kind of a police sign saying wanted, and it lists the reasons why he's wanted, and one of them is like for being a dick. And I'd never seen this before. I'd never seen that before until I freeze framed it. And I think one of the other ones is for fucking shit up. And that's the police. That's the police reason.
But I like that he does those sort of things. Yeah. You've got to really look for them, but he's very subtle.
And one of my favourite jokes in the whole thing is that at the start, when they're first put into the suspended animation, you see a real restaurant in America called Fuddruckers, which is a burger restaurant. And over the course of the 500 years, the name Fuddruckers gradually changes until the year 2505, it's Buttfuckers.
There's a neon sign.
Yeah,
that's great.
And there's all kids in there having a birthday party and butt fuckers.
And they like it. They just look so good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some of the supporting actors then. Let's talk about Dax Shepard as Frito Pendejo, his lawyer.
He's so lovable. But you also really just want to smack him in the face, especially when he's incriminating poor average Joe himself.
Yeah.
He just completely digs him because he starts to agree with the prosecutor. Like, yeah, this guy's a dick. Yeah, he totally did it. But he's so lovable. He's almost childlike.
Yeah.
When you see the drawing to show him where this time machine is, it's like kind of how Mark spells, like time machine.
A little dig there.
There you go.
Oh.
Note that one down, Ben.
Oh, give it a rest. Go on. Jeez.
I like the way he speaks as well. He speaks like he's got a fat tongue. Can't really do an impression of him. Oh, you shut up. I like money, though.
He also likes watching guys getting kicked in the balls, which, I'll tell you what, sign me up.
That's my favourite thing.
Ow,
Series my
balls. Link it.
The Ow My Balls guy.
What is the national anthem? And storms the crowd.
I think my favourite bit is towards the end when they're at the party and Frito goes up to him and says, I really enjoy your show, and then just does that massive kick in his balls. That's fucking... I was in tears at that.
When we're talking about special effects, the bit when he's actually on the washing line and bounces back up, that's the worst special effects I've ever seen in my entire life.
Still worked. I was like, yep.
He's in, what else has he been in recently? I saw him in, was he with something, Johnny Knoxville? Is he in that?
Well, he's married to Kristen Bell.
Oh. Yeah, he's lucky bugger.
Bloody hell. Yeah. I think I've seen, was he in like, was it the film about the disabled people? Is it The Ringer or something?
I can't
like that?
Remember if he's in that. I like film.
I love that film.
Yeah. It's pretty good, but I think he might be in that. But he's in something I've seen recently, and I like his characters. He's always, again, quite similar.
Yeah, quite
but
sweet. I like the guy. Simple but sweet.
Yeah.
He meant well.
I like it.
Saving the best for last, Terry Crews as President Camacho.
Oh, my God. Probably the best character in film history. Let's just say that now. Don't big it up too much, but what would you do when he arrives on set and you ask him to do that and he does it?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
He doesn't give two shits.
I love him so much.
I tell you, this is why I love Terry Crews so much. He's a former American football player. I believe he played in the NFL. And then he might have got injured or something like that, so wanted to transition and go into a different career. He is built like a brick shithouse. He could have made a great career as an action movie star. Easily. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But because he's such an innately charming and funny man, he's gone down the comedy route. So you've got him in things like, he's in Brooklyn Nine-Nine now as Sergeant Terry Jeffords. Love him in that.
Yeah.
He was in Everybody Hates Chris. He played the young Chris Rock's dad, and
he's
he was
so
great
good
in that
in
as well.
That.
He's so in tune with comedy that he's taken his career that way, which you don't expect from a guy who's 6'5", 300 pounds. It's just not what you expect to come out of him. But he's brilliant. He's fucking flawless.
This is one of his best ever roles because he just doesn't give a shit. There's no worry about his pride. Watching this film back, he just has to let everything go. He can't be worrying about his family coming to watch the film and judging him or going to learn how to act. He just lets his hair down, literally. His hair,
yeah,
I like his hair.
Yeah, yeah.
But he is one of the best characters, and this is the thing that stuck with me from this film. I just couldn't get over the fact that he was doing this.
Yeah.
There is nothing more likeable and more attractive than watching someone not take themselves seriously. And if there is anything that has his name on, hell, I'll even watch The Expendables knowing that he's in it.
Yeah.
I will watch it because the guy is so much fun to watch.
Yep. I love him. We should have him in our family.
He has the influence.
Uncle Terry.
Yes.
He sounds like a pedo, doesn't he? Uncle Terry.
No.
I'm loving this. I'm loving the fact we've gone through. We don't normally do this for the rewatch. Yeah. Talk about all the different characters, but that's what made this film so special.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Can I take it back to the beginning of the opening scene where you have the couple who are debating about having a child, but they don't want to bring a child into the world that's currently going on.
Yeah.
And then you have bloody Cletus and his family who are literally breeding like rats.
Yeah.
And they are the dumbest motherfuckers ever, and they just continue and continue and continue. Whereas this couple, the guy ends up dying. So then she's going to try this new artificial insemination process, and we don't see if she even gets a kid. But the others, they have pretty much taken over the entire world. And I think that is such a cool little way to open up the film, crack the story open, and you know exactly what you're getting yourself into. It's a ride.
I read an article on a website the other day that really pissed me off. A website called Salon.com, and I forget who wrote it, but they're a twat. And basically their argument was that this film is awful and toxic because it puts forward a view on eugenics, which is sort of selective breeding. And the writer was trying to suggest that what Mike Judge is saying is that we should breed out thick people and only let the, you know, the mentally capable survive, which is basically what Hitler wanted to do. So he's trying to make out like this film is evil and sick and toxic because that's like, get over it, man. It's a comedy film.
Exactly.
Don't read so much into it.
Watch more stuff from Mike Judge and realise this guy's not taking anything seriously.
Yeah,
he's
exactly
having fun at you, you moron.
Exactly. And you've mentioned going right back to the start there. I want to go to the very end. Did you stay and watch all the way to the end credits and see the extra scene?
Oh, I don't think I did.
It's not a massive scene. Not a lot happens. But you know, during the film where Maya Rudolph's character, the prostitute, she keeps referring to Upgrade, her pimp.
Yeah.
And she keeps saying about how Upgrade's going to come and get her. And Joe has to say to her, no, we're 500 years in the future. He's dead. Don't worry about it. And in the end credits, you see that there's a third one of these pods. And out of the pod comes Upgrade in his like big fur jacket and his pimp hat. And he's strolling along. He's like, I got to find me this bitch. And that's the end of the film.
Oh, they had kids and everything. Aww.
I like it. I thought you were going to say the ending was that the new president was elected and it was Donald Trump. That would have been the perfect
reveal. And then it was the end of the film.
And that's it. Wow. I've really enjoyed this. It's been a good one. And that's what I like. Sometimes you've brought us stuff like Fist Foot Way, which not a huge film, but suddenly I've just now discovered one of my favourite comedies. Mm. I've watched it three times. I've not done for any.
That's
even the big, big films we've done.
Absolutely.
It's been good.
It's been enjoyable.
Should we score it?
Yeah.
I'm going to throw it to you then, Mark. You've seen it three times. What's the score?
I'll give it a 9.
Wow.
Because it's good fun.
That's big.
Yeah,
that's big.
It's good fun. Yeah, it's just, you don't often see a film for the first time and want to watch it again.
Very true.
Brilliant.
I'm going to give it a good old-fashioned 8 out of 10. Mm-hmm. Hearty fun. Love Mike Judge so much. And it just makes me want to explore more of his work or even rewatch it.
And if you want to explore more of his work, watch his next film after this, Extract. That's a good bit of fun as well.
I certainly will.
Get involved. I'm going to give it a solid 8 as well. I think this is a great film. Endlessly rewatchable. So many funny lines. So many funny background jokes. Love it. So overall, Idiocracy gets a skip to the end. 8 out of 10.
Brilliant. So it's now time for my choice for the next rewatch. And as we know, on the next episode, we're going to be watching the brand new Star Wars film, The Last Jedi. But it's also going to be Christmas, so we'll probably have a bit of a few brothers ciders and a few tipples.
Hello.
And I think as it's Christmas, we should have a Christmas film. Oh, I don't know about you guys, but let's not break the tradition. What did we have last year?
We had Home Alone, or when I was pissed, Home Alone.
Bloody hell. And the year before, I think we had Die Hard.
Yeah, so you've had Bad Santa as well.
Yeah, we've had some good ones. So I think on the next one, let's not ruin the tradition. Ben, this is for you. We're going to be watching Elf.
Yeah!
They call me Hal. They call me Stacy. They call me her. They call me Jane. That's not my name. That's not my name. That's not my name. That's not my name. They call me Quiet Girl, but I'm a liar.
It's time for our one-off game show, which is called Name or Shame. Name or Shame. And the way this works is, as I'm sure you are well aware, a lot of actors and actresses use stage names. They don't use their real names in public for whatever reason. So what I've done here is I've collated a list of 10 actors and actresses and their real names. I'm going to put these out to you and you need to tell me their stage names, the names they're more famously known by. And it's a one-on-one competition. It's Gemma versus Mark, and it's going to be the first person to shout out the correct name gets the point. Ah, but here's the rub. There's more to it than that. I'm going to give you the name. First one to shout out gets 3 points if you get it based on the name. If you get it wrong, you're locked out or the other person has a free run at it. If neither of you get it right, we'll then get a clue towards that person's identity. If you get it right after the first clue, you then get 2 points. Again, if you get it right, you get the points. If you get it wrong, you're locked out. If neither of you get it right, you get a second clue. And if you get the name right then, you get 1 point.
This is good.
So 3 points if you get it from the name alone, okay. 2 points after one clue, 1 point after two clues. Is everyone with me on that?
I'm so invested.
Far, I'm still in... Just about.
And that's it. That's it's as simple as that.
So there's no, you know, screwing each other over. It's just...
No. Well, I mean, you know, it might get to a point where you're so far behind on the score that you've got to take a punt. You've got to go for the 3 points. You can't be willing to wait for the clues.
So it's just a case of shouting out your own name first to have a go?
Yeah, we can do that. We can do that. So shout out Mark or shout out Gemma.
A lot easier.
Good, yes. yes.
A little behind the scenes knowledge.
Yes. Yeah, makes editing a lot easier.
Are we ready for the first real name?
This will be interesting as well. You learn from this game.
Number one then. Thomas Mappother the Fourth.
Bloody hell.
Any clues?
I wish I could have like a number behind my name.
Yeah, me too.
I bet it's something completely different as well. Like not like someone like Tom Cruise or something. You know what I mean? No, I want a clue.
Okay. So for 2 points, your first clue, known for doing his own stunts.
Gemma. Tom Cruise.
It is Tom Cruise. Oh my God, Mark even said it. He said it's not Tom Cruise. I'm sorry, but it is. So that's 2 points for Gemma. The other clue would have been, he demanded that we respect the cock.
Nice.
And just so you know, Tom Cruise is the cousin of William Mapother, who Lost fans will know as the other Ethan. And he took the name Cruise from his great-great-grandfather.
Oh, not that he likes cruises.
He might.
Well,
like Scientology cruises.
I'm not talking about the one on the boat.
He is actually mental.
Allegedly.
Let's leave it there. Are we ready for clue number two? Yes. Gemma is two up. Two
I don't zero. Need. We don't need to know that at this point.
Such a bad
You're just
loser.
Rubbing salt so in the wound. Bad. We've just found out she's got 2 points. All right.
Number two then, Ileana Mironov.
No way. Any clue? I should try and get the points, but no.
No. So you want your first clue?
Go on.
Recently played Jason Statham's mum in the last Fast and Furious movie. Gemma.
It's Dame Helen Mirren.
It is Dame Helen Mirren. Wow. Ileana Mironov.
Nice.
I did think it was. I was like, no, I'm too much for pussy.
No. The second clue I would have given you was famous for her portrayal of Queen Elizabeth II. She has a Russian father and he anglicised their name from Mironov to Mirren when they moved to England.
I love That's Helen nice. Mirren.
She's incredible. She's about 80 and she looks about 50.
She looks amazing.
She does.
So that's 4-0.
All right. Yes, we know.
He's so annoyed.
Are we ready for the third one?
No.
Yes.
Carlos Estevez.
Gemma.
Go on.
It's Charlie Sheen.
It is Charlie Sheen. Oh, 3 points for the pooch.
Don't get too cocky. We're only 3 in, all right?
Oh, don't get cocky, kid.
Don't get too cocky.
The clues I'm going to give you. First one was made his name in Platoon and Wall Street. And the second one, he was one of the men in 2.5 Men.
Can Gemma see your...
No, I can't.
Right now. Let me, I'll turn it to a
slide. Jesus, give it over, darling.
How did you get that just like that?
Because Estevez, and I've heard his name is Carlos. If you've ever watched Machete Kills, he uses his real name as Carlos Estevez.
There you go. He is the son of Ramon Estevez, a.k.a. Martin Sheen, who changed his name as a young man because he struggled to get roles with a Spanish name.
Mm-hmm. But Emilio didn't, did he?
No, he went with it. Wow.
He went native.
And that's why he's the A-lister that he is today. Are you ready for number 4?
Come on.
Yes.
Morris Micklewhite.
Oh, I know this.
Well, if you know it, guess. Oh. It's 7-0, by the way, Mark.
I think this could be a whitewash.
Now I'm ready for a clue.
You want a clue?
Yeah.
He's appeared in every Christopher Nolan film since Batman Begins. Go on, Gemma.
It's Michael Caine.
It is Michael Caine. Another 2 points for the pooch. Good Lord. The other clue would have been, he was only supposed to blow the bloody doors off. His original stage name, you'll like this, his original stage name was Michael Scott.
That would have been better.
Yeah, but there was another Michael Scott, so he changed it to Michael Caine after he saw the film The Caine Mutiny.
Maybe the original one did the scarn.
Can I go home? Because I'm getting absolutely demolished.
You'll get a point in a minute, maybe.
I don't want this to be a complete whitewash.
Hold on, sorry. Let me just top this up. 9-0. But it's still plenty to play for, man. There's still 6 to go, yeah.
Oh,
so that's 18 points to play for, dude.
Yep.
Okay, next one. Julie Smith. That's tough.
No, I'm not. I'm not.
I feel like I should just go for it, but then I'm locked out. Then you'll get another... No.
So you want your first clue?
Yeah.
She won an Oscar on her 5th nomination.
Gemma.
Oh, Gemma,
I'm going to give it a go. I don't think it's right, but I'm going to give it a go. I think it's Meryl Streep.
Incorrect. She is locked out. So, Mark, you can have a punt for 2 points, or we can go for 1 point with another clue, but then you're both back in the game.
Okay.
I forgot the girl's name, but if I tell you the film she's been in and stuff, will you give me...
No.
Come on, dude.
Absolutely
you
not.
Never let me do that, no. So...
Fucking brain's gone, but I know the woman's name.
Is it
know
Julie
what
Smith?
She looks like, and it's pissing me off. Can I borrow my phone for 10 seconds to look at the film? That's just to look at the film she's
I
in.
I never get that opportunity. You always go, no, Gemma, you're wrong, fuck
it's
off.
9-0.
So, still everything's playful. I want to win this fair and square.
Fucking, what's her name?
You're going to have a pun, or are we going to get to the second clue?
It's just going to piss me off. Give me 1 second.
Oh my God. I'm locked out anyway.
Yeah,
so.
We'll go for the third clue.
So for the third clue, you're both back in the game now, yeah?
Okay.
She took over the role of Clarice Starling from Jodie Foster.
Gemma. Julianne Moore.
It is Julianne Moore, extra point for Pooch.
And that's the name I was trying to think of.
Yeah.
Ten.
No, it really was. Because I was going to say it's the girl from Still Alice, and I can't remember her fucking name.
Ironically.
Yes.
And the way she took that name is her mother's middle name is Anne, and her father's middle name is Moore. Julianne Moore.
Nice.
There you go.
Lovely.
Are we ready for the 6th one?
10-0.
You could still win, Mark. The 15 points on the table. I mean, it's going to be tough.
I'm just worried he's going to start flipping tables in a minute.
It's going to be tricky. The win for you really would be getting a point now.
Yeah.
Just a point from somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. This is the real quiz. Yes. Oh, next point wins.
Every time.
Number 6 then. Mark Sinclair. This is real tough. Mm-hmm. Really tough.
Yeah. Stepping out.
I'm going to have a guess.
Really? No, it's crazy if you do.
Really?
You won't get it.
No clue.
Ready for your first clue then?
Yes.
He was handpicked by Steven Spielberg for a minor role in Saving Private Ryan. Mark?
I'm just going to guess, just for the fun of it.
Okay.
Simon Pegg.
Was he in Saving Private Ryan?
I don't know.
He thinks Shaun of the
Dead. No, he wasn't.
Oh dear.
So Gemma, you can have a free guess
okay.
for the 2 points.
I'm going out.
Or we can have, we can go to the second clue and you're both in again.
Okay, so if I go for a guess, mm-hmm. you know, it's just for
you don't lose
for
anything.
Funsies.
Yeah. And giggles.
I think it's Matt Damon.
Incorrect.
Never mind.
So I said minor role. He's the main bloody character. His name is in the title. Right, here's your second clue then. He is Groot.
Gemma. Vin Diesel.
Gemma is Vin Diesel.
Fucking hell.
That's 11. And Mark Sinclair, his mother's surname is Vincent, which is where he got Vin. And yeah. apparently his friends used to nickname him Diesel because he has a lot of energy.
That's
but
bollocks.
That sounds like bullshit yeah. to me. I don't buy that for a second.
It's like in Step Brothers, was it?
Dragon. You're going to call me Dragon.
But my friends call me Dragon.
I can still win.
3, 6, 9, 2 You could just.
Yes. Yes.
Right, are we ready for number 7?
Okay.
Demetria Gynes.
That's a great name.
Mm.
I'm changing my name to Demetria Gynes. No.
No. I don't think I can win now. I only draw.
Which is definitely going to yeah. happen. Are we ready for your first clue then?
Okay.
She did sexy pottery with Patrick Swayze.
Gemma.
Gemma.
Demi Moore.
It is Demi Moore. That's correct. So Gemma's up to 13 points. Good Lord.
Yeah.
The other clue would have been she shaved her head for G.I. Jane. Gynes was her mother's and stepfather's name, and she changed it when she married a musician called Freddie Moore.
Wow.
Mm. I like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is like Wikipedia.
I know.
Benipedia.
That sounds weird.
Nope. Yeah. No. Yeah, no. Skipopedia.
Yeah. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
Ready for number 8?
No.
Shall I just give Gemma the points?
Yeah. Yeah.
Number 8. Krishna Pandit Banji. Oh. Any ideas, anyone?
You
Say it again.
Krishna Pandit Banji. Would that really help? Me saying it again. Is that going to change anything for you?
Give me 1 second. Can I get half a point if I get half of the name?
No.
I can't remember the first name.
Oh, go on, give it and we'll see.
Wheatley.
Incorrect. Oh. Locked out. So, Gemma,
yeah.
you can have a free guess sure. for 3 points.
So why the hell?
You might as well have a punt.
Okay. As a guess, I'm going to say Dev Patel.
Incorrect. So I'm going to give you your first clue.
Okay.
He was knighted in 2002.
Oh, man. Oh, Gemma.
Go on.
Is it Sir Ben Kingsley?
It is Sir Ben
yeah!
Kingsley.
Ah! Oh no, I knew something and you didn't.
Another 2 points for Pooch. He was the son of an English mother and an Indian father, and he changed his name as he believed that a foreign name would hinder his career.
That sucks. Mm-hmm. That really
Fair play.
Sucks.
15-0 it is at the minute, Mark.
I think I could do all right. I'd like 1 point. That's all I want.
Everyone loves a tryer.
Yeah.
Two more to go.
I'm not sure. There's still two more.
The pain on your face.
It's okay.
Okay, next one.
It's not again.
You ready?
I'm done.
Netta Lee Hirschlag. Don't laugh, that's a real person's name.
I'm jealous.
Netta Lee Hirschlag. Any ideas?
No way. Mm-mm. Clue one.
Sorry.
Made her film debut at the age of 12.
Gemma.
Go on.
I think it's Jodie Foster.
Incorrect, locked out. Mark, you've got a free guess here, kid. You can get some points on the table.
Natalie Portman.
Correct!
Yes! That's the real quiz. This is Blockbusters.
You fucking wish.
2 points.
Not
for
bad. Yeah, bit of pride.
Yeah. Oh. The other clue would have been that she's the mother of Luke Skywalker. She was born in Jerusalem and eventually changed her name from the Hebrew Netta Lee to the anglicised Natalie, and she took her grandmother's surname of Portman.
Nice.
Well done, Mark. Well done. The fight back is on.
Yeah.
I feel like you've just given him a juice box for participating.
Are we ready for the final clue?
Yes.
All or nothing. Do you want to go for it? Risk it. Go on, just for a laugh.
No, Mark, I hardly win these games. I'm taking this.
Why would you do that?
Exactly.
For the listener's suspense. Come
yeah,
on.
No, I'm happy with my win. I'm happy. Well,
hang on, it's not over yet.
Here we go then. Number 10. Nicholas Coppola.
Mm-mm.
I'll have a guess.
Go on.
Nicolas Cage.
Correct.
Yes.
3 points for Mark, so it's 15-5. It's not as bad as
yes!
it was. The clues I was going to give you were, number one, was he was once married to Elvis Presley's daughter, and the other clue was that he randomly punched women in the Wicker Man. So Nicholas Coppola, Nicolas Cage, is the nephew of Francis Ford Coppola and cousin of Sofia Coppola.
Wow.
But he changed his name to avoid accusations of nepotism in the film industry.
Gee, I think they did. They should have.
So it's 15-5. However, I did do a tiebreaker in case the scores were even. So do you want to do the tiebreaker?
Okay.
This is the real
question.
Oh my God.
Now, before I say it, I just want to give you a note. It's not the really obvious answer you're going to think it is. Okay?
Okay.
So the name is Michael Douglas.
Mark.
Yes.
Michael Keaton.
Correct! Yes! That was the real quiz. Mark yes! wins.
No, fuck that. Woo-hoo! No.
Wicked.
I never get these victories. I'm taking it.
Thank you. I just want to say that's the best comeback of all time.
The clues I was going to give you was that he's played a DC hero and a Marvel villain. Mm-hmm. And the second clue would have been Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
Yes!
He changed his name to avoid conflicts with Michael Douglas, obviously. And it's rumoured that he took his surname from the famed silent movie actor Buster Keaton.
That's really cool.
Cool.
So there you go.
That was a really good
Can
game.
Can we just say at this point, because obviously Gemma won, she absolutely annihilated me. Yay. But let's just say the final score, to be fair... 15-9, because that just sounds a little less painful.
Well, 8.
We'll call it 15-8.
Bless him. Yes. That was a really good game. That was brilliant.
Good game, good game.
Good game.
And you've learned. You learned as well as, you know, the listeners out there now will be going to work tomorrow going, did you know that Michael Douglas is another Michael Douglas?
Yeah. I'm like, shut my mouth.
Skip to the end. Fun and informative.
You're very welcome, Danny. And keep in mind, if you have any problems, talk to me and I will help you.
It's now time for some good old listener questions. And kicking things off on this episode, we've got Rupert Denholm Hall, which is at Hall_business. Will Simon Pegg ever make anything as good as Shaun of the Dead or Spaced? And should he even try?
Well, I'm sure he will, and I hope he will, but he should definitely try. It would be foolish for him just to give up.
Trying.
Oh, fuck it, I've already done it, I'm not going to bother now. Of course he should try.
You don't need to do a voice of Simon Pegg because everyone says you sound like him, so just talk in your normal voice, dude.
I would love to see him and Nick Frost and Edgar Wright get back together again and do something better than World's End.
Wasn't there talk? Just do a shit in a cup. But I'm sure I saw photos of them like working on some secret project.
So I
think they are coming back with something. But he's doing Mission Impossible at the moment and he's been writing it and stuff. So he probably doesn't give a shit at the moment. He's very, very successful.
Yeah, well, he's going to be in the new... Ready Player One, isn't he?
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I'd love to see him reunited with that Cornetto trilogy and just give us something different. Not like a horror, but we've had the buddy cop. Something random, just weird, different.
Yeah.
I think he's got the goods to do it.
Yeah, maybe a zombie film.
Done it.
Night of the Living Dead. Yes, but another one.
Yeah, Night of the Living Ed.
Oh!
Look at that, look what she's done there.
There you go, sequel. We're going to copyright that.
Brilliant stuff. Let's go three ways.
Next question. The next question comes from Hal, which is at BozDog. We've had some really good Twitter handles this week. Yeah. I really like it.
Good handle game.
What is the most interesting movie universe that you would like to explore more of? For example, he's chosen Highlander or John Wick.
Mm.
Well, to be honest, mate, you've got some great ones there.
I'd like to see maybe Pan's Labyrinth, like get a little bit of a backstory of all the weird and wonderful creatures that we bump into, especially that freaky hands guy, you know.
The old eyes.
I want to know what he's all about. What's his story? Who hurt him?
Yeah, why is his hands like that?
Yeah.
Do you know what? I would love to see something set in the world of Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yes! Oh my God, yes!
Yeah, that kind of that half-human, half-cartoon world. And there was talk for a while back there of doing a sequel. It never panned out, but I'd like to see more.
I'll take my money.
Back in the day, I used to watch a lot of Mask, the cartoon.
Yeah.
I would love to see that. That was amazing. But also, and Ben's going to completely grill me, I do want to see more View Askew stuff, that universe of James.
Have you not had enough?
No.
Surely.
Because we've only had Yoga Hosers and Tusk.
Oh, masterpieces.
Leave them alone. Don't bother with Moose Jaws and just do what you're good at. So to give us more Dogma.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff.
Is he still doing a sequel to Jay and Silent Bob?
Yep. The reboot. So that'll be good. Next question comes from James, which is at James Asm. Why did 3D fail to take off? And do you believe that the virtual reality films will become mainstream? You know, enriching films or just another gimmick?
I think he's hit the nail on the head with using the word gimmick. That's why 3D didn't take off. It was just a way of studios and cinemas charging more for the ticket for the same film.
Yeah.
And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But for every good one like Doctor Strange or Blade Runner 2049, you have 100 Last Airbenders. Not worth it.
It's all visual. You need to hook the audiences with a good old story. And good performances. I mean, anyone can throw an axe through the screen, but you've got to make sure it works altogether.
I don't think it took off because people had to invest in it and buy glasses that were 20 quid. And then originally they were about £100 for the active ones where you had to put the battery in. And people were just not prepared to pay that. The TVs were an extra £500. I know now you can get like a LG 3D TV for about £500, but no one wants to sit with the glasses. If you could do it without that, I think it would do well. But the VR stuff, I've had to go on a PlayStation gaming one. It's not worth the money. It's just, it doesn't do it for me.
I can't see it catching on VR, and I could be completely wrong. Maybe in a year's time, I'll look like a mug, but I don't.
We'll be doing this podcast via virtual reality. Yeah.
Didn't they, like, they were really popular in the early 90s, weren't they? It was on, like, Games Master.
Yeah.
It's like a really shittier version of Nightmare. Get rid of me!
Bring back Nightmare.
Mr. Glass Half Empty, which is at DRobinson92. What's your thoughts on a segment for this podcast for TV series? So we branch out a bit. He watches a shed load. I like you said shed, not shit. A shed ton of TV programs, and would love to hear our guys' thoughts on that. You know, what's good, what isn't, stuff like that.
I'd love it.
We don't have the time within this particular show to do TV as well. I remember when Mark and I first launched this, and we had these big plans. This podcast was going to be films, TV, music, wrestling. It was going to be football, everything. And each episode would have been 9 hours long. So we had to sort of narrow our focus. So there's not enough time. But it's one of the reasons why we brought in Skip to the Recommend, so that we can then branch out onto other things like TV and music. That being said, there might be a little something in the pipeline TV-wise.
In the new year.
In the new year.
Let's just leave that there.
Yeah.
Leave it dangling.
Ian Wiltshire, which is at BadgerMan80. These names, man. I'm boring. Mine's just my name. So I need to try and get something more hip. Which on-screen couple have such bad chemistry it ruins the film? My lord, I'm going to kick things off because I absolutely can't watch this film because of it. It's a shit film anyway, but it's the best of the bad bunch. So we all know about Star Wars Episode 3.
Yeah.
Revenge of the Sith isn't that bad.
It's okay.
It's a lot better than the first and second one. Anakin and Padme, Natalie Portman and Hayden Christian. Those two together are reading off a script. And
as opposed to what actors?
As it's being filmed.
You think they've got like cue cards?
You can see their eyes looking.
Change the other one, guy.
Natalie Portman is one of my favourite actresses. Look at Leon when she was only 12. Look at stuff like V for Vendetta, stuff like that. You know, Black unbelievable. How do you get it so bad when it's such a big film? And maybe she just stopped caring. Hayden Christian should be shot. And that whole thing is just... When she's giving birth...
Oh, God, yeah.
It's a boy. Fucking useless.
The worst one is, you're breaking my heart.
That's probably wiser, isn't it? You're breaking my heart, Lisa. Anakin, you're breaking my... Awful. Is that for your choice?
It was the first couple that came to my head. You try having a conversation with a brick wall. It's really hard. But yeah.
The one that's come to my mind, it doesn't ruin the film because the film was fully ruined anyway, but it's Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez in Geely.
Oh my God!
And the reason why that's so appalling is they were a real life couple. How could a couple who were supposedly in love have zero chemistry? They seem like strangers. They seem like they were in some sort of hostage situation where they were forced to talk to one another, and they were a real life couple.
Funny they're not together, eh?
Yeah.
Do you reckon that was like after the counselling session? Yeah. Like, let's watch this back, and this is why you two are not meant to be together. Yeah, that's a great show. Mm. And if you'd like to hear about that film, we did it as a rewatch.
Oh, geez, what the fuck were we thinking?
I don't have any
idea. Gobble.
This is very nice. What Were They Thinking podcast?
Nice. Oh, wow.
I like that. If you had to cast someone other than James Franco, who would you cast to play Tommy Wiseau? My God.
Oh, I'd want someone method. I'd want like a real hardcore actor who would live as Tommy for years before he took the role. I'd want like Sean Penn.
I can see that.
You'd nail it.
Oh, Michael Shannon. He's got that intensity.
He has,
Tom Hiddleston.
He's got the hair.
He's got the hair. And he would be serious and give it a good go.
He wouldn't be low key, would he?
Get out.
There we go.
Come on,
it took quite a long of the episode today to get that.
I'll never stop.
Chris Ducker said, awards season is coming up quickly. It is. It does come around really bloody quick, and we love it here on Skip to the End. What category do you think they should add to give recognition to some unsung heroes? He himself feels that a category would be good for the best stunt coordinator or the stunt man. That's a really good one, actually. I really like that question. Yeah. What would you pick, Ben? You're an Oscar man.
I would 100% agree on stunts. I think it's shocking that they're not recognised. A lot of the other big awards bodies do recognise stunt performers and stunt teams, so the Oscars should too. The one I think should really be in there is motion capture performances. I think it's fucking criminal that Andy Serkis gets overlooked every year because he's amazing. Watch the new Planet of the Apes film, him as Caesar. I don't want to spoil what happens at the end, but that end scene, it's like, just give him all the gold, give him everything.
He'd win it every single year. Yeah. Whatever film he does that year, he'll win it for. And I'm happy with that.
I'd be down with that.
Oh, hands down, best boy. Like the gaffer.
Oh, I thought you were saying best boy, just an award he's for best boy. Yeah. You are the Oscar one. For the best boy.
Best grip, key grip. No, I'm 100% with Ben. Like, how has Andy Serkis been overlooked so many years when you consider, like, he pretty much made that whole way of acting with
Gollum.
Yeah,
he pioneered that kind of thing.
So why is it still being constantly overlooked?
Although, that just made me think of an interview I read the other day. Someone did an article of the best motion capture performances, and it was all Serkis. And then Ahmed Best, who played Jar Jar Binks, came out and said, no, I pioneered this. Fucking do one.
Go back to your Comic-Con and do some signatures for a tenner, you twat. Wow. I think that I know animation and stop animation gets put into it, but I think stop animation deserves its own award. I think the amount of work that goes into that is mind-blowing. I was watching a making of the other day about, what's the one, is it the two strings thing in the
Kubo two, and the two strings.
The making behind that film blows my mind. And I know they can win in animation, but it should be in its own category, because that's not just drawing and computerized stuff. To make those things move, it blows my mind. Absolutely awesome. A few more questions. We've got Richard Owen that says, with the upcoming release of Bright on Netflix, can you ever see a time when Netflix or Amazon Prime films can be up there and compete with the top awards? So we're talking Oscars, we're talking Golden Globes. I do. I think that they're very, very, they're probably touching it right now. They're so close.
Yeah, they absolutely will, but it's more likely to be Amazon than Netflix because they have different release models. So what Amazon does is any film that they produce, they will then release in the theatres as normal and then will show it on Amazon Prime some months later, whereas Netflix get rid of that model. They release things at the same time and they don't release things wide. They just put them in one or two cinemas to make them eligible for the Oscars. And because the Oscar committee are so traditional, they don't like that. They see that as a loophole. Basically, you're giving this. Basically, they see Netflix as video on demand, you know, straight to DVD. Yeah. They don't look at it as being as prestigious, whereas Netflix play the game properly. They release it in theatres wide for a few months, then show it. So we saw it last year, you know, what's his name? Affleck. Casey Affleck won the Best Actor for Manchester by the Sea. That was an Amazon film.
It was, wasn't it?
Yeah. Whereas Idris Elba didn't get nominated a couple of years ago for Beasts of No Nation, even though he was one of the best performances of the year, but because it was a Netflix film that came out on TV the same day as it did in the cinema, the Academy weren't interested. So the answer is yes, but more Amazon than Netflix.
Mm-hmm. What Ben said perfectly. Yeah. I can't match Ditto. That. Couple more questions. We've got Martin Summers, really small here, just literally four words. The Avengers trailer, discuss. Yeah. I don't think I've calmed down from it yet. My heart.
Wow.
The world has gone mad because in a week you had everyone slagging off the Justice League. Not just us. Everyone was saying DC has shit the bed. No one cares. The same week, Marvel come out and just give you a 2:13 trailer and it's the most viewed in history, and it just reminded you how you assemble a cast with 10 times more characters. And it's only fucking 2 minutes worth of material, and it was better than anything DC have ever done.
The only thing that was missing was the mic drop at the end.
That's what they should have had, just Groot go boom.
Yeah.
But how long have we been waiting there for this? So long.
Yeah.
And to see all these characters that we know and love finally come together, and especially the payoff at the end of that trailer when we see Thor meet some new buddies.
Yeah, the Guardians.
Yeah.
The couple of things I had with it is, where's Ant-Man? You see pretty much everyone else, except Hawkeye, but who gives a shit? And you don't see Ant-Man. He's one of the main members here. So that was worrying. I hope he has a decent role in it. And the other thing, which I thought was great, was the CGI. So going back to Steppenwolf in Justice League, he looked fucking awful. And that pop that we're giving away looks better than he did in the film. He looks more human. So to see Thanos come out in this trailer and the CGI be mind-blowing. You can tell they've done mocap with Josh Brolin because it looks like Josh Brolin. The little movements of his eyebrows and stuff, he looks somewhat human. It's flawless.
And that's 10 seconds worth of material.
Yeah.
Do you remember when Stone Cold Steve Austin used to come out and you'd hear the breaking of glass? That was like Thanos coming out. It's like, yes! He's here!
I'm so excited, and it's only April.
Yeah.
It's going to be incredible.
Bring it on.
Final question comes from Kame, which is at Kame0138. In recent years, we've seen a lot of indie film directors land big, big movies. What big director would you like to see do more films on an indie budget? That's a great question to finish with.
It's
a real thinker. I'm going to kick things off with this one because I enjoyed Christopher Nolan when he first started out. So when we saw Memento and he didn't have huge budget, he nailed it. He absolutely was astonishing. Yes, we see Dunkirk now with multi-millions, but he shows he can do it. So don't keep giving us these IMAX big blockbusters. Just remind us about your roots. But one of my favourite directors that does a lot of indie that's gone a bit bigger, but just go back, Duncan Jones. Because Warcraft is wank.
Yeah.
Like, utter wank. But you know that this guy can do the good stuff with small, small budgets.
Hello, well, Moon.
He's working on a film at the minute. I think it's called Mute. And I think it stars Justin Theroux and Paul Rudd. And
you be telling me about this?
Yeah, and it looks cool, man. Check out Mute.
That sounds really good. But Moon, you know, that is how you make a film on a low budget. And it's just astonishing.
Let's go visual. Let's see the budget being taken away and stripped back to basics. So let's say Guillermo del Toro.
He's good.
I think he could do it. I think he could pull it off.
I'm really looking forward to... Is it late?
The Shape of Water.
That looks incredible.
It's a shame. It comes out in America this week, but we don't get it until February, I think.
If Virgin Atlantic are listening and would like to fly us to America...
All expenses paid.
That's America.
First class.
Oh, that would be unreal. Yeah. If Del Toro is listening and wants us at it
as a screener. Yeah.
Sorry, I just said a quick... That's first class.
That is first class. You really know your onions. I think for me, this will surprise you, but I'm going to say Michael Bay. Because Michael Bay is a fucking terrible director. Let's have it right. But the one film of his in recent years that I've enjoyed was Pain and Gain, the film with Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah.
It was the smallest film he's pretty much ever done, I think. And it was pretty good. So I'd like to see him force himself to do films where he can't just rely on explosions and tits to do all the work for him.
That would be interesting.
Not there's anything wrong with explosion and tits. I'm all for him, but I'd like to see him have a try without that.
What about exploding tits?
No, too far.
Too much, Jimmer. Keep your questions coming. The best way to get hold of us is go on skiptotheend.co.uk, one of the best looking podcast websites out there. And when you're on there, there's links to Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and our email. Every question we read, and we'll read them all again in 2 weeks' time.
You know what they say, love is blind.
And that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. I know I say this every time, but by God, that was fun.
By Jove, yes.
I've just get off for an hour and a half, for 2 hours.
I could have gone anywhere.
Completely. Oh, it's just like the highlight of the week.
Yeah.
And it is for our listeners. So I love that. So. And it's free.
I love how you're speaking for the listeners now. Apparently. We're telling them this is the highlight of your week.
He's like the union
this
rep.
This is the highlight of your week. You will now go onto iTunes and tell the world that we are the best podcast in the world.
Five stars.
We, of course, aren't at the end of the show yet, though. We always have our little extra feature. It's called Skip to the Recommend. That's where we come to you with our favourite pop culture item of the week. It doesn't have to be something new. It can be something old, but it's something we're enjoying now, and we want you to enjoy it, too. Poochie, I'm looking at you. What is your Skip to the Recommend this week?
Well, this time around, I've gone for a 6-part podcast series.
Ruddy hell.
Stop plugging other podcasts.
Oh, this one is an absolute doozy. So I've selected the true crime podcast Dirty John.
Oh, I read about this the other day. Yeah.
It is the absolute tits. It's brilliant. So it's a true crime podcast from the Los Angeles Times and Wondery, and it's presented by Christopher Goffard, who's a journalist for the LA Times. I'm going to be very careful what I say, because the best thing to do is go in this dry. Do not read any...
That's revolting.
Do not read anything about this on Google. I would say if you want to know a little bit more, do it once you've heard all of the episodes. But it's a 6-part series that tells the story of Deborah Newell. Now, she is a successful Californian interior designer who, after a series of failed relationships, decides to give the dating game one more try. And from there, she meets a guy called John Meehan. Now, he's a devout Christian who works as a bit of a doctor's assistant in his spare time. And they develop a bit of a fast-paced relationship. So, you know, as relationships go in the early stages, you're in the throes of love and lust and happiness and
love
all sorts.
Love already? Bloody hell, that's a big word to start using.
He went in on fifth gear, let's put it that way. But when she introduces him to her kids, who are grown up, they don't really feel he's all there. They think he's a little bit weird. That's all I'm going to tell you.
Wow, you've juiced us up nicely.
Yep. Download it now.
But it is addictive listening, and it keeps you wanting to know more and delve deeper into the story. And my God, it takes you to depths you don't even think you will go. This is a real twist and turn kind of story. The conclusion, like I said, please don't research on this. You would never guess as to where this conclusion goes. It is astoundingly good, addictive viewing, and fine journalism too. A really great tone all the way through. Like, props to Christopher Goffard as well. He presents it really flawlessly. Go check it out. If you're a fan of S-Town, I would recommend this, but I think this is better than S-Town personally.
Wow, that's huge mm-hmm. words.
And absolutely fantastic.
I think you kind of get an idea of the sort of character he is by the fact that it's called Dirty John.
Oh, he hated washing. Absolute stinker.
B.O. Bob.
Coming soon for the makers.
The sequel.
Yeah. So how many episodes?
6 episodes. Nice. That is it.
Mark likes it. Short.
Brief. Yeah. Brief.
But yeah, you can download it on any podcast app, but it is fantastic.
That's good. I'm going to check it out. Mm-hmm. I need something sometimes. You know, listen to our own podcast all the time.
I know. Yeah.
It gets a bit... It doesn't get boring. It's not still the best ever, but you get to the point where you need something different.
Give it a try.
Marky Mark, what have you got?
Behind the scenes, I've been ill this week, and I had a few days off work. And on one of those days, I sat on the couch, and I watched a crime drama on Netflix, which is a saga called Shot in the Dark.
Ooh. Amazing. Yep, I totally agree with you. It's fantastic.
It's unbelievable viewing, and I couldn't believe that I watched the whole lot in a whole day.
Well done.
Ben, you're looking like you've not seen it.
No, I haven't. Oh, tell me more.
Oh, good. It's great.
So this follows real-life nightcrawlers. So we all watched the film Nightcrawler, which we absolutely loved.
So the stringers who go and do the journalism, like ambulance chases and stuff.
Exactly that. Wow. And they want to be the first on the scene. Now, this isn't just some sort of spoof. This is following them on their real day jobs. And there's three brothers. I think they're called the Ragebrook brothers.
Yeah, the Brits.
Yes,
yeah.
And they work together to basically be the first on scene. It is a real-life Nightcrawler movie spread over 8 episodes.
Yep.
It's by far the most brave set of bastards I've ever seen in my entire life. I don't want to ruin it, but the first episode, they're on a massive freeway in America.
Oh my God, yes.
This guy is filming because he's seen a car that's broke down on the side of this carriageway. So the lights are all out, it's broke down, and he's filming it to get some footage of just this guy. He knows he should walk over there and tell the guy that his lights are completely out, he's on one of the busiest roads in New York. If he carries on, he's going to get hit. But he also knows he needs to get some good footage out of this. So
hits,
he's standing
the
there in his car rolling this film, knowing that he's got basically two options: help this guy or get some of the best footage. He decides to go with the latter.
Of course.
You see this massive lorry hit it blows up, and this guy is dying in this car. It's on fire. He runs, saves the guy himself, pulls him out of this vehicle, and he's filming it the whole time to get the best footage he can. My heart is racing because this is real footage. This isn't some CGI spoof. This is real stuff. He realises he fucked up and made a mistake because this guy nearly died. Luckily, they resuscitated him. Mm-hmm. The guy was okay. But for the rest of that series, he's never the same guy again because he knows he fucked up.
I literally went, shit!
I
kind of don't want you to answer this question. We're going to ask it anyway. Did the police get involved with that? Was he questioned about his lack of activity, or was
because he was the hero and saved the guy? Yeah. He kind of got brushed off. But his brother's a bit of an arsehole. They start falling out. They don't all work together because they know they get more hits and more views. And the person that gets there, they should be working as a team. Season 2 is confirmed already.
Has it really?
Yeah, which is great. The footage that you see on this series of 8 episodes is the most intense, real, horrible shit I've ever seen.
Oh, it's awful.
But it's the best viewing I've ever seen because you just want to see more and more. And I can't believe how good Jakey Boy portrayed this because it is exactly like this, but in real life.
Oh, Steve, you know the dude with the glasses?
He's an absolute...
He is like Lou Bloom with a eye prescription. He's awful. And they try to humanise him. I'm like, no,
he's an absolute animal. But the fact is, you see the gear they've got, all the different radios to tune in. Even the police are saying, get the fuck out of here. You got here before us. You're in the way. But they will do whatever they can to get the footage. It's the best thing I've seen on TV this year.
It's brilliant. You'll love it.
This is right up my street. The closest thing to this I've seen, other than obviously the fictional film Nightcrawler, is I saw a documentary once about paparazzi in the UK, and it showed this one guy who used to park up in a van, and he cut a hole in the van door so that he could put a photo lens through, and he parked up outside of Carrington, Manchester United's training ground, just literally watching the players arrive in their sports cars in the hope that some of them would be speeding so that he could photograph them speeding and then sell it to the news. That's the kind of prick he was.
Subhuman scum.
And this is like that time. 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
I'm
all over it.
I'm going to blitz this.
I warn you, if you watch an episode after tonight of recording, you'll be up at 6 in the morning still.
I think I watched 8 in a row.
Yeah. And they're quite short.
They are.
Of course, Brie.
It's It's so. I think someone actually, that Mr. Glass Half Empty, put it on our Twitter saying he watched it. What did we think? And I just went, I'll better check it out. And that was it. My day had gone.
Oh, I'm down for it.
It's so good.
Love it, love it, love it.
Oh, and there's so many twists.
Yeah, yeah. It's massively amazing. Yeah.
There you go.
Excellent. Yeah. I shall finish it off with a film. And it's a film called Brawl in Cell Block 99.
Vincent Vaughn!
Have either of you seen this yet?
No!
Okay, so it's written and directed by S. Craig Zahler, who also wrote and directed Bone Tomahawk.
Oh, there we go.
Sold.
Yeah, which is a film that I know we all love. Oh, God. So in this film, Vince Vaughn plays a drug dealer who's been thrown into prison, and then he's tasked by a gangster to find another inmate and kill him, or else the gangsters will kill Vaughn's wife and unborn child.
Christ.
It's that simple. It's a total throwback, a 70s grindhouse-style picture, and it is the absolute best Vince Vaughn has ever been. A lot of people don't like Vaughn. They're not big on his work. They just see him as this kind of lunk-headed guy in comedies like Old School. But I generally like him more than people do, I think. I, for one, I'm one of the few that thought he was great in season two of True Detective. I thought he was trying to do something different out of his wheelhouse, and I thought he nailed it, but a lot of people didn't. But this is undoubtedly the best thing he's ever done, and a lot of reviews say the same thing. It's not just him as well. Like, there's a sadistic jailkeeper, like the sadistic warden played by Don Johnson. He's like chomping on a cigar all the time, and he's an absolute dick, and it's just so much of a throwback. Everything about it is really brutal and real and not stylized. It feels raw. You see every skull crunch into the floor. You see a bit where Vaughn stamps on this guy's head and scrape his head backwards over the turf so his skin just rips off his face and it's just this exposed skull. And all the effects are very poorly done, but intentionally so. They look really cheap and like the kind of shit you'd see in horrors from 20 years ago, but that makes it more fun. It's just as gruesome and makes you feel sick, but you kind of chuckle at it as well. It makes it more enjoyable. It's just so old school. And the film's a little bit overlong, admittedly. It's 2 hours and 12 minutes, and he doesn't get into the titular Cell Block 99 until 90 minutes.
Ooh.
It's a bit like, you know, when are they going to get to the fireworks factory? But when they get there, the fireworks go off. The final brawl is one of the most sickening, brutal things you will absolutely ever see. And I love S. Craig Zahler. He has this really plain, unflashy style. A lot of his shots are static. There's not a lot of camera movement. He just shows you what you want to see, what you need to see. Once that's done, he moves on to the next thing. And I really love the guy. He's one of those where, when I watch one of his films, I feel like he's made it just for me. I feel like he's tapped into my veins directly. And I think we're entering a golden age of these young writer-directors. You've got people like him, Taylor Sheridan, Ben Wheatley. There's a lot of these auteurs out there who are just creating these things for themselves out of the realms of your big studio pictures. We're living in a golden age. And this is a great example of just a really fun, fucked-up B-movie.
Oh, it's right up my alley.
Ooh. But yeah...
It was the comedy eyes.
Wow. Some really good recommendations there. Completely, you can go and listen to the podcast while you're at work, get home, sit and watch this series, then before you go to bed, watch that absolute masterpiece of a film.
I wouldn't say masterpiece, that's a stretch.
But damn fine.
It's a very fine B-movie film.
Ah,
What a selection.
Talking about a selection, our Christmas selection episode, selection pack episode.
I'm
struggling.
Selection box.
It's a selection box of an episode. It's coming up only in 2 weeks' time.
Right.
Indeed. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So what's our rewatch?
It is Elf.
Oh, yeah.
I can't wait for Buddy. It's been a while as well since I've seen it.
Oh, it's so good.
Probably a year. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. And you know that people on social media can jump on board
They are going to lose their shit.
Sleigh. It's going to be a good one.
Riding
our sleigh. Yeah,
sleigh. Gemma, what's our topic?
We're going to be talking about our top three movies about film. And I feel like I should clarify this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we should look on sort of the true story kind of documentary style. I think we should be looking at films about musicians, whether they be real musicians, whether they be fake musicians, or just the music genre in whole. So no documentaries, please.
Gotcha.
But films.
About music.
Music.
I absolutely love it. We're also going to be, our main review is a small documentary about the plight of the Papua New Guinea rainforests. Oh, wait, no, it's not. It's Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi, baby.
I've already got a bit of movement in my pants. We weren't that psyched for it. We said on the last episode, we're not psyched. We are.
I'm getting
we were tired.
I'm twitching now.
I cannot wait, and it's going to be a contender for the film of the year.
Oh, it's funny you should say that. Yeah. You should say that. So what else are we going to do on the next episode?
Our top five movies of 2017.
Yeah.
But not only that, you know what we do at Skip to the End. We give you more than just the films. We give you our pop culture top five of the year. So it's like Skip to the Recommend, but you get five of them in one go.
Oh,
yeah.
That is hell of a lot to take.
It's pretty good. Mm. Little thing you've missed as well. We also, traditionally, will always name our worst film of the year.
Oh, shit. I forgot about that.
Oh, fun.
Throw that little bugger in. Gemma, who are we masturbating over?
We are going to be masturbating over a guy that I think he's a bit of an up and comer. He's really quiet. So oh, yeah.
That puny little guy.
He's a young lad. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Never heard of him.
No.
That's so big.
We'll see if we can maybe unearth some gent. Oh, who am I kidding? It's gonna be such a good MMD.
That's not a tumor.
But yeah.
Consider that a divorce.
It's gonna be amazing.
It's gonna be genius. And of course, we'll have all the usual stuff. We're going to have so many prizes to give away. Mark is going to have his big sack full of gifts and prizes and goodies.
Honestly, and it's so full, I just need to get rid of it. I just need to splash it out to all the, not to all the kids, to all the people in the world.
Oh God, oh God.
His sack is so big, he struggles to walk at times.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So I'm going to let this bulgy sack be emptied out for all of the listeners' needs.
Oh dear, bring a Mac.
There's going to be everything in it.
Indeed. It's going to be so much fun. It's going to be a classic episode of the Skip to the End podcast with Mark's sack coming in your ears. See you in 2 weeks.